9 to 5 Max Happy Hour, WWDC sponsor, is SetApp. Use the link in the show notes to start your 7-day free trial to access over 100 great Mac apps valued at over $3,000. 9 to 5 Mac is also brought to you by Simple Contacts. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/happyhour or enter code happyhour at checkout. All right, WWDC 2018, here we go. I got back last night around 1 a.m. It's now around 9 a.m., so not that long ago. So I'm still kind of recouping, but we have a lot to get through today. So let's see. The trip for myself was a blast. I got to meet a lot of listeners in person. That was excellent. And got to attend the keynote, which was a little bit rocky. So it was awesome to be in person, but in terms of like having Wi-Fi, that didn't happen. About an hour before the keynote started, the Wi-Fi just stopped working for people in the room. And I kind of relied on using hotspot, which was also didn't work that well with the cellular network slammed. And so at one point I was sending Chance at 9 to 5 Mac SMS because iMessages wouldn't go through. And I was writing things out for my story and then sending them as SMS to put into my story for him. So,
wow.
Yeah. Hope they figure that out in the future years. But other than that, it was neat to be in the room. I watched the keynote on the plane last night on the way home on my phone just to kind of, because I always do like a recap. I watch it again, even if I watch it, like cover it live from home. But it seems like it's a lot easier to retain information whenever you watch the video than versus in person, I think.
Well, this is your first time at an actual like Apple event, right? Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you find, how was the atmosphere? Like all the clapping around and all that baloney?
It was neat. I see a lot of people that we work with in the tech media space, and a lot of people I'm familiar with. So it was just kind of neat to get to see everybody in person. But for the most part, it was just like being around people that I know and I kind of consider friends and family. And then for the keynote, it was just, let's relay information as fast as possible.
Yeah. Like business as usual.
Exactly. It was nice.
Yeah. UnConf, cause I was at UnConf London for like a keynote viewing session thing. And there was like 500 other like developers there.
Uh-huh.
That was pretty fun actually. It's kind of interesting to see like what stuff got reactions from people. Like everyone would kind of like clap around and at certain things, and then you'd have like the an emoji section and nobody would be doing anything. Like, it was quite a fun contrast. Like the AR stuff, I thought people would be kind of like muted about, but a lot of people in the room were into it. It was interesting.
Yeah, sitting in the press area, there's less reaction because everyone's like typing on their keyboards. But I guess if you're just among developers, then there's probably more reaction. I would hear it, and I would think like, there's employees clapping or whatever. But it's probably actually developers. Just people in the press area are more muted. So that was Monday. Was the keynote. I spent Sunday going to see Apple Park Visitor Center and then One Infinite Loop, again and different things. So had a nice Sunday before the big event. On Tuesday, I got to go see the podcast studio at WWDC, which they did for the first time last year as a session where you can go and record for an hour. And so me and Jordan Kahn recorded Tuesday's episode of 9 to 5 Mac Daily. Using Apple's hardware and their computers and everything. And then they give you a USB-A flash drive. And then I had my MacBook, 12-inch MacBook, so I needed my adapter to get the file off.
The Apple Podcast Studio is not quite on the modern I.O.
Yeah, but it was super cool. They had like an iPad Pro as a countdown timer, and they, you tell them how much time you need, up to an hour, and they give you the countdown. And two people, it's like your audio engineers, and you tell them your levels and everything, and they work with you. This year they had a really cool like wall set up made out of styrofoam, but it looked like the physical version of the invitations and all the WWDC art, where it was like patterns and had like the podcast logo sketched out. And they used
They used
Philips Hue Go lamps, which are like battery powered, to project purple lighting onto the white styrofoam to do like the podcast theme. So it was super neat, and you could take photos. So we did a story of what it looked like and everything. But that was neat. And the drive that they give you is either a GarageBand or a Logic file, for me to open in Logic, of like the project ready to go, and like you just edit around that. Or they give you it also in the drive is a folder of like every combination of audio. Like there's four mics, and they record all four, even if it's just two people. But there's like the four mics and like different formats. And then there's one that's like a stereo mix of all of them. And the Logic file that they gave me was like not what I'm used to. So I just used the files of like the straight up audio and then put it in the file that I'm used to. But it's super cool. It, like Shure microphones. We've got the model, I think, in our story, and then like Beats Pro headphones. It felt like I was on like a Beats One radio station or something. But overall, it was super cool. And I asked our PR rep that was assisting us with getting in. We were going to do a happy hour from the podcast booth because there's no way we could do the WWD show within 1 hour. But if, you know, would it be possible to have you remote in from England? And she said, yes, this year that they allow up to, you know, I think one person to come in via FaceTime and be recorded. So we didn't need to do that, but that's cool that it's an
option. That's cool to
know. Yeah, maybe next year. Well, next year my goal is for you to be there, so.
We'll see.
Yeah. And then on day three on Wednesday, I went to the WWDC run, which was an official session this year with Nike Run Club. And so I got to meet Jay Blonick, who's in charge of fitness and health technologies at Apple. And then Jules Arney, who was the woman presenter who demoed watchOS 5 on a bike, you know, so that was neat. And then the run kind of kicked my butt and then everyone was given out a pair of Beats Power Beats 3 headphones as kind of the reward. Now that was a little stressful though, because there was a gear check-in for the run, and I checked in my car keys just thinking like, I don't want to run my keys and lose them. But check-in folks made a mistake and like put my keys in someone else's bag. And so for several hours I was kind of stranded like with my rental car, had my phone and my wallet in it, locked in the parking garage, and I couldn't get to. So,
oh dear!
But through the magic of Twitter and the awesome community, when I finally got access to my MacBook, I tweeted out, you know, just what happened, and you know, said like, heads up if anyone sees some keys, you know, let me know. And someone else named Thomas had already seen, and he was in England, by the way, that someone at WWDC named Alexi had found the keys and tweeted out, like, if anyone, you know, knows who these are, let me know, or I'll turn them into lost and found at the end of the day. And it was just like,
so such a transatlantic key recovery.
It was such a relief. And everyone was making the joke of, ask Siri where your keys are, the Tile, which is like in the keynote, you know, it's just like, it's clever, but when you're expecting to pay $600 to have your rental car towed and door opened, it's not as funny at the time. But all's well that ends well, and so I was super happy.
Twitter can be good.
I was so happy. I love Twitter. It was like the first time in a long time I tweeted that. And at the end of the day, you know, that was a long day, so I unwinded by riding the scooters around San Jose, which at first I thought were goofy, and then once I used them, I fell in love with scooters, and now I'm looking for the closest place with scooters near me.
Yeah, the scooter craze hasn't quite hit England yet, but yeah. I'm expecting it'll come in not too many weeks.
Yeah, I paid like $5 or $6 to like ride around for a few hours. It was nice. So, all right. Now on the way to WWDC, there actually was like a last minute leak that you covered, and tell me about that.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Friend and developer Steve Trant-Smith, he found that the App Store backend API had actually uploaded a video of Xcode 10. And so Xcode 9 was the shipping version at the time. Xcode 10 is the new one coming out with macOS Mojave. And this video was quite compromising in that it not only did it show off the new Xcode, it was all in the new dark mode. So dark mode confirmed. And we got a look at kind of how it looked. And even funnier, when Xcode was shown in the keynote, the same sample project, like it was almost like a clip from the Lee video. It was just played as Craig Federighi talked about it. Like it was the exact same setup. And as well as the dark mode, there was a shot of the news logo in the dock because there's a news app icon. So we're like, oh, there's a news app. And there was also a reveal of the App Store getting video previews because this was a video uploaded to the service. And obviously Apple assumed that nobody would see it because the current App Store on Mac doesn't support videos at all, whereas the new one does. And then this video was found on the API. So the new Mac App Store would support video previews, which kind of led in, you know, to the speculation that the Mac Store was going to get a big overhaul this year. And all three of those things came out to be true.
And the wallpaper,
and the wallpaper. We got the glimpse of like the sand dunes, and it was at night, and it was hard to see. But then people quickly worked out like that's Mojave,
right?
Macros Mojave incoming. Yeah, it was a pretty significant leak in, you know, a season of relative quiet.
And another leak by Apple, basically, like of you know, not someone leaking to press, but Apple having an asset or something, you know, show up.
Yeah, Apple messing up. It's good.
Yeah. And everything panned out from that video. The only thing about it is I think it kind of went under the radar because it was over the weekend. And on Monday, I think a lot of people didn't know about it. And so dark mode was still a surprise for a lot of people. But if you're watching at the last minute, there were leaks indeed.
Yeah, unfortunately, when it happens on Saturday, a lot of like the tech press are all traveling. Like, so everyone it gets missed. But
yeah, I was in between airports whenever Steve TS messaged me and said, "You want to see this?" And I was like, "Of course," you know. They sent the video, so it was something else.
But of course, chassis 95 Mac, we had coverage hours before anyone else. So
yeah, by the time I could alert you to it, you were already writing it up. So it
was awesome. Yeah, that was like, have you seen this? I was like, yeah, I'm on it.
Yeah.
But good find by Stephen.
Yep. All right. Before we get into the breakdown of what was in the keynote and our reactions to it, like overall, you know, how did it stack up to what you anticipated?
I think it was pretty good. After the AltConf thing kind of ended, a few people came up and asked me, like, what do you think about it? And I kind of said, I bet a lot of people come away not so positive and cite, like, lack of... because there was probably a bit more filler than last year of just, like, stuff that probably didn't be there, but it was. But also, there was no hardware, right? Like, if you subtract all of the hardware announcement from WWDC 2017, where they had the teaser of the HomePod, they had the iMac Pro announcement, they had the new iPads, if you took all that out, I think content-wise, it was probably pretty on par with what happened last year. I think iOS had a decent showing of features. Some of them are a lot smaller than others. They kind of cheated on a couple of points. It was like the whole new Stocks app was its own like bullet point, and it's like, you know, in the scheme of things, the redesigned Stocks app is probably, you know, not deserving of a flagship announcement and a normal keynote, but there's a decent amount of content there. Mac OS got more than I expected it to. Like, I was kind of thinking it was going to get dark mode, the new App Store, the news app, and that was about it. Like the Saturday leak was literally going to be a summation of every Mac OS feature, and there was a lot more there than, you know, I was expecting. tvOS got more than last year, but still not very much. WatchOS had a good showing, I think. I was upset that there was no real like dedicated like HomePod section. It got a mention here and there, but there wasn't too much on it. Overall, I was pretty happy with it. Like, if you subtract all the hardware stuff, which I wasn't really expecting was going to be at this event, but you know, if you do the year-over-year comparisons, people are like, well, last year we got all these new, you know, shiny Mac, but it's like, yeah, sure, I'm sure they'll have hardware updates in a couple of months, but on the software basis alone, I'd say it was pretty comparable, a pretty good show.
Yeah. The thing for me was I made a super short personal wish list of things that I think are both possible and I want very badly. And every one of those panned out. So for me, I was happy for that reason. And then there were a few moments in the keynote where things I just didn't think would ever happen that people want, but I didn't think were likely did happen. Like the one reaction I had was whenever they announced CarPlay would work with third-party mapping apps, you know, Waze and Google Maps. I said, whoa, like out loud, just because that sounds hard. And I didn't think that Apple would ever go that route.
Yeah, that's kind of like the same thing as when they did third-party keyboards, right? And they,
sure, yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're never going to do third-party keyboards. It's like, well, 1 year, here we go. Here's some keyboards. And it's like, this year, now you can put third-party Maps apps. And if you, on the talk show, I think Joswiak said they'd actually been talking to Waze about doing this for like multiple years. So I bet the Waze people have just been anticipating every WWDC for since CarPlay was announced. Like, is this a year we can put ourselves in it? Is this year we can do it? And then they finally get around to it. And right. we can talk about a bit about what that actually looks like when we get there in the rundown. The thing that kind of surprised me was all the screen time, you know, iPhone addiction kind of stuff. There was a lot more there than I was expecting them to have. Like, I was kind of expecting a more timid entrance to that zone, and that was like a big thing, like across, you know, multiple different like metrics and things you can do and family control. So that was impressive. I was upset that again we're going another year with little like design cohesion, like the new voice memos app, the new news app, the updated stocks app. They kind of forged yet another divergence of iOS design. Like, the stocks app puts the name stocks in capitals, and below it puts the date, and on the right hand side of your picture the app icon, and you don't really see that anywhere else. And most other apps haven't been redesigned in any visual way, so we're still those issues still kind of drag along from last year, and they just kind of pile up. And I know like the home screen redesign and stuff have been, you know, oh, they were going to do it this year, but now they pushed it back to next year. And I'm kind of hoping that when that does come through, it's not just like a revamp of the home screen. They go and like finesse every stock app and like and actually have like one vision, because I still think we have the problem of, you know, you can say, oh, these apps happened in 2011, these apps happened in 2012, and these ones are in 2015, and these came from 2017, and these came from last year. Like, you can clearly like pinpoint the different like phases of the design evolution since iOS 7, and we haven't really got yet to a standard on iOS.
Yeah.
Despite good design on their other operating systems, I think iOS is still very, very scattershot in how it plays out. I wasn't holding my hopes up for that to happen, but it was like another year, especially in a year when they were kind of like focusing on refinements and performance and like stability. I was kind of hoping maybe they could shimmy in some like UI cleanups, even just like navbar icons, but it didn't really happen.
Yeah. Before we go, I'll say one more thing is that I feel like on the podcast and in our stories that we write, we've been pretty vocal about things that we want to see from iOS, you know, aside from the design unification. And there were a number of things, so many things that happened that we've talked about wanting, that people would message me or tweet me and say, you got the thing you wanted. And I wasn't sure which one they were talking about, you know, which is a good thing, a good problem to have. So,
They definitely addressed a lot of things.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's go through the keynote. I'll let you start.
Okay, we'll run it down. So they started with this, I think, the best intro video they've had in a long time, which is kind of this mockumentary of like a, you know, David Attenborough, Richard Attenborough kind of nature video where the, you know, the foreign species was developers running around and like, who are these, you know, what do these people do? And it's like, and it culminates in the keynote and they have like this developer join the crew and they kind of get pushed away like a herd. And I thought it was really, really entertaining. And normally the intros that they have in recent years are kind of like, I think they're just kind of a bit cringy, but this one was really fun. They integrated some shots of some people coming into the show in the morning, which is kind of what they did for the September event, right? They showed shots of the San Francisco theater, of people actually coming like 10, you know, an hour before the show actually starts. So they have some cool cinematography there. We got a lot of messages saying that, well done to Zach for being featured in this video. That is not the case.
That was the most amount of feedback I got underneath it was about that video. Now, back in September, whenever the Steve Jobs Theater was the first event there for the iPhone event, Jordan Kahn, I don't know if I'm Mac, was in the video, because, I mean, it was just press at the event. And, you know, so yeah, that's all you would see in the videos. But in this case, I remember watching the keynote, you know, being there in person and seeing the video and seeing that person has characteristics that I have. He looks similar, but that's not me though. And also I knew like what I was wearing and where I was, and that was like developers coming up the escalator. But so many people said congratulations for being in the video or that they saw me. And I just tweeted out, like, I don't think it was me. And I'm not sure that people saw that or that it was definitive enough. But it wasn't me this time. Whoever it was, I'm very curious who they are because they got me a lot of attention. But it wasn't me, though.
that was fun. Did you like the video?
I did. I liked it more the second time on the plane because you could appreciate like how polished it was. It was like how highly produced it was. Usually that they're like lighthearted and goofy, like some kind of like a sitcom or comedy, you know. And this was like, you know, like you said, mockumentary. It was very well done. It was a good video. Yeah,
and I did see a bit of pushback on Twitter from people saying it just kind of like promotes the stereotype of developers being, you know, predominantly men that don't leave a room all day and don't know how to work in social environments. I think that was just kind of the joke, right? Like, Apple's not promoting that as a thing. That's just like, you know, it's just funny to play up to it.
Well, I mean, at their developer conference, they had a sweat with Kayla sweat workout session, and they had a Nike Run Club run. So, I mean, that's the developer conference. That kind of goes against the idea of staying inside and in the dark, yeah.
Yeah, I can see if, like, you haven't followed anything Apple's done for, like, the past 10 years and then see that video and get that impression. But if you know anything about the context of their, you know, inclusion and diversity programs, I think you can understand how it's positioned. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And then Tim Cook comes on stage and he does a nice little intro and he says it's the biggest show ever, blah, 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 blah. And then they immediately address the hardware question by saying today is all about software. And they show all the four platforms on the screen, you know, iOS, watchOS, tvOS, and macOS. At this point, I was starting to question the format a bit because macOS was clearly going to be last. I was like, what is happening here? They normally leave, like, iOS is the big thing, and they introduced that first. I was like, this is surprising to me, but I'll play with it. And then eventually you worked out exactly what was going on when they got around to it. But, yeah, it was kind of going against the grain of them to actually start with, you know, what most people call the bread and butter, which is, you know, iOS, which is obviously on their biggest platform.
Yeah, there was an element of like clever stage storytelling and how they did that. I mean, last year it was tvOS first, and that was just to say that we don't have anything to say this year. You know,
yeah, tvOS last year was we have Amazon Prime, and then it didn't happen for another 6 months, and then that was it.
Yeah,
but yeah, so then they introduce Federighi, of course. Craig Federighi comes out to do iOS 12, and a big question I had before the show started was obviously bugs and stability is going to be a thing for this OS, right? We saw all the rumors, all the leaks. Apple confirmed it in that leak memo that this thing happened and it was clearly a focus. But was it going to be one of their like marketing tentpoles, the thing they like advertise to everyone, right? You know, keynote, it's a developer conference, but the keynote is meant to be viewed by anybody. And yes, definitively yes. The number one thing they started the whole show with in terms of features was a focus on performance for iOS 12. And they talked about how they're doubling down. They used those exact quotes. Because iOS 12 runs on every device that iOS 11 runs on, so that goes all the way back to the 5S, they're not dropping any device this year. And they said they especially focused for performance tuning on older devices, addressing a lot of the kind of community criticism of like the new iOS update slows down my phone, iOS 11, bloody, bloody, blah. What's interesting is that they never mention the bugs side of that thing. Like we always heard about like performance and stability. Like sure, they went nail on the head with performance, but they didn't mention the bug fix stability thing as a public facing thing.
Right.
And this is beta 1. And it's hard to get a good read on that kind of stuff. But I think you can probably infer that they had both a focus on performance and bugs as an overall theme. And clearly for marketing, it sounds a lot better if you can talk about your phone's going to be twice as fast versus... Because when you have to mention the bug thing, you're admitting that there are problems before, right? Whereas if you come from performance and say, your phone's going to be twice as fast now. It only sounds like an improvement, not
right.
We're backtracking and fixing our steps.
Yeah. And supporting older devices. I mean, there was evidence a few weeks ago that the 5S would be supported, which was kind of a surprise, and it panned out.
Yeah, and it is kind of, they used an iPhone 6 Plus as an example, and they said that you should be able to see apps launching 40% faster, keyboard appears 50% faster, you can access the camera from the lock screen 70% faster. And these are big numbers, right? But there is kind of like a subtext of, it's sort of sad that we're in a state where the keyboard can appear 50% faster.
Well, somewhere along the way, those things slowed down. I mean, I used the 6 Plus whenever my iPhone 10 replaced, and that was tough. And I felt like it was tough, and I felt like it wasn't just that, you know, phones are faster now, but that something along the way slowed down that phone. And I mean, it would be interesting to see, what is a 6 Plus on day one, you know, battery aside, but just the shipping software of a 6 Plus on day one look like compared to now on iOS 12.
Yeah, so that'd be iOS 8 versus 12. Because say if the keyboard is 50% faster on 12, it's not, I don't think it's documented, like, is that actually as fast as 8? Or is it somewhere in between? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is it actually going back to original out-of-box performance?
And that conceives that this stuff slows down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it'd be cool if somehow we can get our hands on like an iOS 8 phone and compare. And this thing about supporting older devices and with not just supporting with new features, which they've done for a while, right? But also keeping them speedy directly affects like people I know. Like most of my family are not on the latest phones. Like my brother has an iPhone 6. My mum has a 6S. Like these things, and they have said to me in the last 6 months, like, This freezes more often, you know. It's like stuttery and freezes on me. And what they mean is it doesn't scroll as well. Stuff takes longer to load. But like, you don't have the terminology for it. But that's what they mean. And it's like, if this can directly address that, I think people are going to be over the moon with this update. Like on performance alone, like if you can make it feel significantly better than the kind of downward path that these older devices especially have taken. And even on the 10, right? Even on the brand new device, I think you install beta 1 on 12, and there are many places where it feels like scrolling is more smooth than what it felt like even on 11.4.
Yeah,
And this is only beta 1. Like, something that always wound me up was the activity sheet. So the share sheet, where it has like Twitter and email and all that, on those actions, you could press on that share sheet on 11 and you'd be sitting there for like 4 seconds before anything happened. Like, I don't know what it was doing. And one of the things they especially say here is that the share sheet and apps now launch twice as fast. And you can definitely feel it, even on iPhone 10. Like, it, you press share and it appears now. You're not like waiting around.
Yeah.
Then they moved from performance, and a lot of the performance stuff, like, even said, right, we're doing really well in beta 1, but you have to wait till like the final version to get a full read on how much the performance stuff is going to affect.
Yeah, before Craig even gave out the numbers for, you know, how many X is better of what action, he said it's early days still, but these are some of the results that we're seeing so far.
Yeah, exactly. So, and on beta 1, you can definitely notice it being better in many places. And if you just look on Twitter, people are saying on older phones, like, they're seeing dramatic differences. But again, you have to wait till, you know, 12.0 final to resolve exactly how much better it's going to get and how many bugs have been squashed in the overall scheme of things. And these things there's a lot of subjective quality to this. Like, it's hard to count this stuff. But I think you kind of get a feeling for it once this goes public. Like, and for me, I was told beta 1 is pretty stable. There are definitely places where it falls down, and I've had a few springboard crashes where you get the black spinner for a while and it restarts.
Me too, yeah.
In general, I think it's pretty good. So I'm hopeful, right? Like,
yeah.
This is going to be what drives people to update to 12 more than anything. Like, on the older phones, you've had the narrative, don't update you know, your phones are going to get slower. But Apple's basically saying, like, you can make your phone twice as fast if you update. And this is if you're talking to, you know, customers from 2013, 2014 who haven't bought new phones yet. Like,
yeah.
And if that bears fruit, like, that's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah. It'll be fun to see where that actually comes through. Because especially with them pointing it out, every beta now, you know, you have everyone, like, carefully examining this stuff, and like if anything gets slower, you know, it's going to be like a massive Reddit thread or it'll be a viral YouTube video. So it's definitely gonna, they put themselves out there for sure.
Yeah, I think this year there's greater temptation to install betas, but I think the same warning applies, because I have seen bugs, like you said, Springboard crashing. One thing that annoys me is I've seen like the alert badge on the messages app even though there aren't any new messages. Mm-hmm. So same warnings apply. It's still a beta. It's just a pretty good beta. But
yeah, you know. I'd say it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, I installed it on my only phone whilst I was still in the middle of London at AltConf. So on the way home, I didn't even know where I used Maps to get there in the first place. And then on the way home, it was rebooting. I was like, oh, geez, I don't even know where I'm going. But I managed to work it out, and so I was luckily able to get home. But yeah, that was pretty risky. I'd say if you're crazy, you should go ahead and do it. Like, if you're crazy like us, in general, I think it's okay to wait it out. Like, you should be okay, but there's always those asterisks of,
and you never know what'll pop up in beta 2,
exactly.
3, 4,
yeah. And it's not a smooth curve of like beta 2 being better than beta 1 and beta 3 being better than beta 2. Sometimes, especially around like beta 3, stuff gets worse for a little bit before they clean it up closer to the end.
Yeah. 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by SetApp. SetApp offers access to over 100 quality Mac apps for just $10 a month. And Happy Hour listeners can get a 7-day free trial. Just look for the link in the show notes. SetApp is often referred to as the Netflix of Mac apps, and now has passed 20,000 paid users. The $9.99 per month service now provides access to a curated selection of 119 native Mac apps from over 100 developers. All of the apps are hand-selected by the developer MacPaw for inclusion to ensure it only offers high-quality apps, including popular Mac apps that are normally standalone purchases or subscriptions. These include Mac utilities like Bartender, Better Touch Tool, Screens, and iMazing, as well as developer tools including Marked and Rapid Weaver. SetApp members can have access to iStat Menus, Archiver, and Clean My Mac, too, just to name a few. Start your 7-day free trial to explore the best Mac apps with SetApp today. Our thanks to SetApp for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
And they moved on from the kind of performance section to this big thing on augmented reality, and they kind of announced this new file format, USDZ, catchy name. I feel like that clashes too much with your American currency. Send me some USDs, and it's like,
that's why I think
an augmented reality object. But they had like this cool demo where in Apple News they had these kind of 3D objects that you could spin around, and then you could kind of like place them on the camera and it would scale them to size. Like, he had a guitar that was sitting on the table, supposedly showing you what the real size it was. That was cool. In general, I don't think they did much to convince people that, say, you know, AR is like a gimmick right now. I don't think they did much to change people's mind there. They had a Adobe guy come out on stage and talk about this file format for a while, and apparently there'd be integration with Photoshop and stuff, but it's hard to get a read on how much that actually makes a difference to anything, because how many online stores are really going to put up AR objects of every, you know, all their products?
Yeah, that's what I liked about it, though, was that it wasn't just AR within an app that you download from the App Store, but it was AR. I think one thing was in Apple News, and it had the logo that let you know that it was an interactive, you know, object. And then the next one, like you said, the guitar was from Safari. So
yeah,
that's if these kind of objects are in places that you're already browsing, then I think they'll be appreciated. But I just can't be bothered to go download an AR app for an AR experience. Like, it needs to be where I already am. And rewatching the keynote, that was kind of my takeaway was, so if this does show up in places, I'll see that logo and think, you know, now I'll just try it out. You know, why not? But I wouldn't go and download like the Fender app to configure a Fender guitar just to see that. But if I'm already doing it and I can, then that's useful, I think.
Yeah, if it has to be like integrated into the websites and apps that you already use.
Yeah.
Like, I can see the Apple Store doing it, right? They could have AR versions of all their products, and you could literally lay all of Apple's products out on a table. Yeah. Speaking of you saying you're not going to go to the App Store and download anything special, Apple's going to put one on their phone for you.
Measure.
Measure, which is probably the number one AR kit app we saw this time last year throughout the whole summer that all the third parties make, which is like a ruler. Apple's doing one a year later.
It was like the proof of concept app that everyone made, and I never found one to be so reliable and a joy to use that I kept it around. And poking around Measure and just judging by the demonstration, it looks like it's solid enough, you know. And I noticed that they moved the level from Compass to Measure. So if you used Compass for level, then you're going to want to use Measure now for that.
Yeah. Did you use an AR kit measuring app for like after the novelty wore off?
I tried them just to see, like, is this concept like real? You know, is it viable? And none of them stuck with me, like, as like, oh, this is a ruler replacement. I haven't tried Apple's yet to see, like, compared it to a ruler. But if it's effective, you know, that'll be, I think it'll be useful.
Yeah, I tried it out. It's about as accurate as all the AR cut ones last year, which is not surprising. It's just, you know, an app built on the same framework. It has a slightly nicer interface than some others. But I just don't have many situations in my life where I'm like, I need to really measure something. Like, I don't reach for a ruler, you know, very often. And even if there came a time when I was like, I need to measure this out, I don't know if I'd be able to trust the AR number enough to
versus a ruler.
Yeah, to not go and find like a tape measure or something.
Yeah.
Like, if you just want to know how big your TV, like that's what I did. I just measured my living room TV on the diagonal and it was like 39.5 inches. And I think our living room TV is 40 inches. So it's like, you know, I got it, you know. But if I'm like making a desk, I'm not going to trust the AR ruler to get the dimensions correct. Like, even if it was right, 900 times out of 100, like 999 times out of 1,000, like, I'm still going to be, oh, I'll just go and find a tape measure. Like, and then outside of those scenarios, I never really want a tape measure in the first place. Like, I'm not every day. It's not like a daily routine to start measuring stuff.
It says that my 12-inch MacBook is 11 inches diagonal, so.
Yeah, that's quite a big difference, right?
Like, yeah.
That's like if you were measuring a package to deliver and you got an inch out, then the courier might not take it. Like there are problems there. I think it's just funny it took them a whole year to like release this app and they didn't do it originally the first time around. And moving the level, which was the, you know, like the spirit level, out of the Compass app, putting it into the Measure app, I don't really get it. Like, now the Compass app only has a compass and it doesn't do anything else.
Well, but I think it makes sense though, because like a level is a measurement. Like, you're probably like adjusting. You know, I think it makes sense. Whereas Compass,
I kind of wish they'd put all three in one. Like, even if they called it Measure and just had Compass as the third tab, I'd go like, fine. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you can measure elevation and compass.
Both like Compass, levels and measuring are so inconsequential to my life that I kind of feel like they don't justify being standard applications. And of course Compass was a standalone app for years before it even got a level, but still it could be put together. And a funny quirk about that is because ARKit only works on like iPhone 7 and later or whatever, you know, iPhone 6s, I can't remember the exact cutoff point, but all the older devices, they put the level still back in the Compass app. Nice. So you have Compass and level still in the same app on the older phones, but on the newer ones, the level moves and you have a tabbed interfacing measure. So it's all a bit strange, but there you go. I think the icon's cool. So
yeah, it's not white.
And one thing I mentioned about the keynote in general is they had like this really, really wide screen and they took good advantage of it with how they had like some imagery and stuff. And like the Measure thing spanned the whole width of this like 18x9. It was even wider than 8x9, I think. Like, it was a really thin wide display and they had like the Measure thing go all the way along. It looked really cool.
Yeah
And so then they had ARKit 2, which is improved face tracking, 3D object detection. The biggest thing they're kind of showing off is you can do like a multi-person experience now, so you could have like a ping pong table in AR and both people could have like an iPad that shows the environment and you could have like a third spectator. They had a Lego demo, which lasted for longer than it should, but that's just like trademark Apple. The AR demo that last WWC lasted forever as well. It was a cool demo. Again, I have to wait until I see like a real game that takes advantage of it properly to be like, oh wow, this is really good, because I struggle to see the use cases.
Yeah, at the convention center, they had an AR like game lab where you could use iPad Pros to play the slingshot game that they mentioned in the keynote, the sample game. And I didn't try it out, but I watched people playing, and it looked very engaging. I was downloading all the betas at the time, so I couldn't be bothered to play it. But in watching the Lego demo in the room, it was like, oh boy, this is going on forever. But you really couldn't appreciate what was happening. But on the video, it looked neat, like that they're taking a Lego set and doing all this stuff around it that's just like looks like magic. But again, like I think our excitement with ARKit doesn't match Apple's, you know, yet.
Yeah, it still all feels like tech demos rather than like something concrete. Because everyone keeps naming Pokemon Go as like the flagship AR app, but you know it's not really anything to do with AR at all.
It's more location, like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like geocaching location app, isn't it? Like very little.
You can use zero AR in that game for the most part. Yeah,
and that's probably what most people do, right? Like. ARKit wasn't even announced when that app was out, so yeah. I mean, maybe they add like, especially with the persistent stuff. Like, if you had Pokemon Go, you can see where other people are throwing Pokeballs on the floor, and you can be like, "Oh, there are loads of people around it." You know, it's kind of like nice little tidbits, but I still haven't seen like a thing that's like, "Wow! I'm really want to go and download that right now."
And is that the limit to active players with one observer?
I
know they mentioned
so.
That, but I wasn't sure if it's like a hard limit.
Yeah, I haven't watched the AR session because I don't care about it, unfortunately. But I think if they had supported more people playing, they probably would have said.
Yeah, that's where it's
maybe you can play up three people playing because it's two active players and an observer. But I think if you could do like an eight-player AR game, they would have mentioned it.
Yeah, what you need is 32 people. That's a good number.
well, that technically is an AR experience. We'll get there in a bit.
Yeah. So photos.
Photos, better search. There you go.
Have you used this Photos app since you've had the beta installed?
Yeah, the search is fine, I guess.
I think it's really good.
It is definitely better than what they had, which was very because the search they had before is the search they've had for 5 years. Even when they added the object and face detection into it, like you just got single rows of stuff. And now you get more key moments and people. They say they index like proper festivals and stuff now. So if you go to like a big gig, you'll be able to search the name of the gig and it will find all the pictures because they hold that on their servers or whatever, like an index of big events that happen around the world. Well, so I think that's really cool.
Yeah, right now, search is its own tab now, which is new, right? That wasn't before, it was like in the top bar.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's its own tab. And. Which would be bland if it was just like the old thing where you just search like maybe an Apple Music where you just like type in something to search. But it says photos, people, places, events. So it already recommends things for you to search. And then it has all these rows of things that it has surfaced for you that you could search anyway. Like I've got events, Father's Day trips, birthdays, restaurants, concerts, museums, theme parks. And those are all accurate.
Yeah, and these are all categories that they already tracked. You just never knew they really existed unless you searched for them exactly.
Right, and then I've got people, places, and those are all, you know, the people and places. And then I've got categories, animal, dog, cat, playground, food, forest, nightclub. Nightclub is actually a photo booth filter. It's taken from a MacBook Pro in 2009. It's not actually a nightclub, but I'll take it. And then below that, groups, which are like, these two faces together or, you know, multiple groups of faces. I think it's really like before it was powerful, but it was hidden. And now they've really surfaced what search can do.
Yeah. And you can kind of combine them together now. Like if you want dogs in the snow, you can write dog and snow and it will join them together into actual queries before it only handled like one tag at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what I'm liking about this is that it's less about like, I want to find something, where is it? And more about just like enjoying my 20,000 photos and videos, you know, iCloud photo libraries. Sure. Like, oh, I'm like resurfacing all these things in a different way than like memories, for example.
And like, if you're a normal person that doesn't watch the Apple keynotes, you probably didn't know that they even tracked objects and areas and events, right? And so now if you go on this search tab, you're getting good options. And they obviously surface like the bigger ones like sport and playgrounds and babies and stuff. So you can just tap that and get in and go, right? Like,
yeah.
It's more about the redesigned search is more about like exposure than actually adding much of like new functionality. But, you know, exposure means new features for people that didn't find those features before.
Yeah, I'm very happy about this, if you can't tell. I think it's well done.
Yeah, and then they have the For You tab, which is replaces memories, and memories just become one of the options in the tab now.
And it replaces the iCloud photo sharing tab, doesn't it? Because that used to be its own tab, too. Because it was photos, memories, sharing, and albums, and now it's photos for you, album search. And you have sharing suggestions, and I think you've got activity there, too.
Yeah, you're right there, yeah.
Which again, I think I mentioned in the last episode, or on maybe the iOS 12 episode, wish list, but I feel like memories was nice, but didn't deserve its own tab, and sharing was just outdated and didn't deserve its own tab. And this For You stuff is like, I mean, we'll get into what it is, but I'm super happy with what they've done here. You know,
I'm unclear on how much of an advancement this is over the old sharing, but it's definitely a lot better. So in the For You now, you get memories as one of the sections. You also can get like recommendations for live loops and stuff. So last year, you could find a live photo and do an effect, like a bounce and stuff on it. But now they're actually going to like algorithmically select some pictures and say, this photo should look really good if you loop it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exposing some stuff there before. The big thing here is like their changes to sharing. And I haven't got a chance to test this out with other people, but this is closer to what a Google Photos experience would give you, where you can like share photos from events to somebody else and they share in full resolution now, which is a big win.
Uh-huh.
And then the people on the other end can share back their photos of the same event. But does it still go to, like, the separate shared album? Or does it actually go into your actual photo library? Like, that's what I'm not clear about.
I actually can't see iCloud photo sharing anywhere on here. And maybe I've got it turned off, but all I see is
if you go on albums, there's shared albums on that page as well.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't see it anywhere there yet, though, But what I have is a sharing suggestion, and it's 10 photos of our kid, and it wants me to share with my wife. And then you can add things to it. You can remove things. You can add movies to it. And then you can remove the suggestion if you want to. But yeah, it looks like my For You tab is kind of like locked to what it was a few days ago. But what they showed on the keynote was like more active than what I'm seeing so far. But
yeah, same here. Like I only have memories on the For You tab at the moment. Like whereas In the keynote, they had like four different sections of different stuff.
I do have sharing sessions and I have memories so far. So
The sharing thing is full resolutions. That's a big thumbs up, because before, if you shared to a shared album, it'd be low resolution. But it's still not quite what I want, where like if you edit a picture that's shared, you're still just copying it. Like it's a separate copy. It's not like a proper like family photo library, which is more what like Google Photos offers. I still think it's kind of siloed off. But it's a lot better now that you can actually get like a full set of pictures from different people on good days.
Yeah.
So it's progress, but it's not like they're not quite got like a full sharing system set up yet.
Yeah. And by the way, the For You like label of what they're calling that, you know, it comes from Apple Music, where they had the For You tab for recommendations there. And then they used that also in news, I think, last year. But I think that originates to Beats Music. Like I think it was called For You or something. It was literally Beats Music's way of saying, this is what we're recommending for you. You know, this isn't your library. This is the, you know, algorithm or hand-picked playlist and stuff like that. And so they're taking that kind of label from Beats Music and applying it throughout the system of saying, you know, suggestions, here you go.
Yeah, and I like the consistency there of using the same name, right? Because then you know, like, whatever app you go in, oh, the For You's the algorithmic recommendations, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Simple Contacts. We all know there are a million things demanding your time, like listening to 3 hours of the Happy Hour podcast. Contact lenses shouldn't be one of them. That's why we're excited to partner with Simple Contacts. The team is making the process of renewing your prescription and buying contacts as simple as using your iPhone. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to get your contact lens prescription renewed and stock up your brand of contact lenses. Here's the thing. Instead of taking time off work and spending hours driving to the doctor, sitting in the waiting room, and having 5 minutes with your doctor just to renew your prescription, you can do it online in under 5 minutes. This is vision care for the 21st century. And you're smart. You listen to podcasts. You know what the iPhone can do. Simple Contacts was created for you. Here's how it works. Take a quick self-guided vision test from your iPhone or Mac. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor within 24 hours. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your brand of contacts. If you have an expired prescription, you can use that too. Just upload a photo of it or your doctor's information and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the busy work for you. Buying more contacts has never been easier. And why should it be hard in the first place, right? That's why Simple Contacts was created. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses, and their prices are unbeatable. Plus, the vision test is just $20. Compare that with an annual appointment, which can be up to $200 without insurance. Shipping is free, and best of all, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour listeners can get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $30 off your order, just go to simplecontacts.com/happyhour or enter the code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. Simple Contacts is not a replacement for your periodic full health eye exam. You still need those occasionally, but it is the most convenient way to just renew your prescription and reorder your contacts. So check out Simple Contacts and get $30 off by going to simplecontacts.com/happyhour or just enter code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. Save yourself time, money, and a headache with Simple Contacts. Our thanks to Simple Contacts for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour.
So it was kind of a small update to photos, really. Like, and the biggest problem with iCloud photo sharing, they didn't have anything on iCloud storage changes.
Right.
Sadly, it's still 5 gigs free and the same tiers as before. That doesn't necessarily have to come in a keynote, but they've done it previous years at WWDC. And said this will be rolling out in a couple of months, but that's something they could bundle with September event, maybe. So I'm hopeful still, but they really need to sort it out.
Yeah. I looked it up on Beats Music. It was called Just For You.
Oh, so they shortened it slightly.
Yeah, they shortened it slightly. They had Just For You, the sentence highlights, but Just For You was the picks for you. So, yeah.
Okay. And then this got me really excited because they had the overview slide of all the different like icons, and one of the icons was Siri. I was like, here we go.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. Kind of. it was my feelings afterwards. Like, what they announce is something called Siri Shortcuts, which are like kind of like you store a phrase of like a code word, right? And then you can make it run actions, you can launch apps. And down the road, they will have like a dedicated shortcuts app, which is the workflow app rebranded. And you can do like a whole sequence of things in line to Siri in one go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they had a demo where she sent a message to somebody. She changed the thermostat. She turned on a fan. She started a radio station and she got driving directions. I think she said, I'm going home. And this was her like whole coming from work to home routine. So it turned on the radio station. It told someone that she was driving, that she'd be home soon. It got HomeKit ready. So it's almost like HomeKit scenes, but for most actions and across the whole operating system, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and one of the things with workflow is that you can create a lot of this stuff. Some of the Apple stuff wasn't exposed, so I think this gives more access than that, and it obviously wasn't Siri connected. But it's kind of like you're programming Siri with the things that it can't do, but you want it to be able to, but not everyone would want it to be able to. So it's like more like your personal Siri. Everyone's Siri will be able to do different things because we're personalizing it. There's like a manual aspect to it, which is like, so far, Siri has known the same things for everybody, and you've not needed to put it together. Now you can build it, which makes it more powerful but also more complex. With workflow, though, when you do these you know groups of actions, you could do something similar, but you'd watch it like you'd run the action, and it would literally like kind of play in front of you. It would open up this app and then open up that app, and you might need to like confirm something before it happens. And with what they're showing is it's a Siri command, and then it happens, you know, without exposing. Like a video playing of all the stuff happening, you know.
Yeah, I see it as a quick fix to add a lot more capability to Siri that could have been just like a different feature, not using a voice command. Does that make sense? It's like because it's really like an automation system that you start with your voice.
Yeah.
But it's not really related to what Siri is. Like,
well, and Siri,
the intelligence
Siri
of an AI is like, mm-hmm. you can talk to it in whatever way you want. Like, their whole idea of the, you know, eight domains of an intent stuff is that you don't have to say a set phrase in a set order for it to know what you mean, right? Ideally, it can develop its understanding of its language regardless over time, and you don't have to remember, like, to start a timer, you don't have to say timer 10 minutes or start timer. You can, you know, say all sorts of things. And for weather, there's so many different formulations of way to do the weather, but for these shortcuts, you know, it's literally just looking up in a list, like, have you said this exact phrase that you've registered beforehand to then go and run, you know, this workflow?
Yeah, and as a HomeKit user, I've kind of done a version of this where I'll make a scene, which is a group of, you know, commanding different accessories with one phrase, and I'll use that phrase with Siri, and it's not like, you know, I guess like human language input or natural language input. It's not like conversational. It's just, I'm just saying the scene name. And that's like this, but for like any app that can kind of have an activity associated, you know, it can track the activity basically. And
yeah, and you can get visual responses in line to the Siri transcript, as well as some other actions which actually do like launch into the apps. But the example they showed is the NPR radio app started playing the radio, and she didn't have to leave the Siri UI. So
right.
One thing I thought immediately was, we always talk about the Amazon Echo, you know, like daily briefing feature.
Mm-hmm.
You could basically make your own daily briefing with a Siri shortcut. Like, you could set up a workflow, you add in the weather, you add in a news update, you can add in, you know, a review of your calendar, and then you'd save it with this like UI where you talk to it and you say a command. You could just say daily briefing, and then anytime you say daily briefing, it runs through and does all those things. So you can kind of emulate some of the stuff that other assistants do that Apple hasn't got around to adding natively yet on your own.
Yeah. I think that the key difference here is that this stuff's running locally on the iPhone or iPad, even when you talk to HomePod, which can do these Siri shortcuts, versus a server-based Siri in the cloud.
Yeah.
Like Alexa being
I can't get the answer to that on HomePod.
Nice. So, yeah.
Yeah, like even if...
which has benefits and then has, you know, drawbacks.
Yeah, and as they make Siri the service better, right, these shortcuts still have value. Like, you can really customize and make some stuff on your own that you want to do.
It's almost like
In the long view, like, Siri shortcuts are very analogous to, like, special keyboard shortcuts that you set up, right? It's really power usery. Not many people do them. But if they're there, if you want to do it. And it's definitely going to, if you're into productivity and using, you know, your iOS devices more for real work, there's definitely some setups here that you can probably make to automate a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, like, it's under the umbrella of Siri, but it's really unrelated to the core, you know, a personal assistant that understands you and does what you want. It's very much like you say these set phrases that you set up before and you've told it what to do, but it's got the cool, like, app integration. And now that it's not some, you know, enthusiast third-party project in, like, a workflow app, it's part of the system, every app's going to integrate and support it. So it's definitely a very good feature, but the idea of Siri getting, you know, significantly smarter still hasn't, like, transpired, I'd say.
Yeah, the way I look at it is that Siri shortcuts based on workflow, the acquisition, which, by the way, is just so neat because Workflow got bought, you know, I guess it was a little bit over a year ago, and it's an app that we used to cover, and those guys, you know, used to communicate with us by email and say, this is what's coming up in the versions. And there was a time where, like, Workflow was like launching 1.0, like no one had ever heard of it before. And they had, you know, the team behind it had like a kind of a clipboard manager app before Workflow. And now it's turned into this, and it's like totally exposed. You can see that the shortcuts app is like, that is Workflow. And even on stage, they had Ari, you know, one of the guys behind Workflow, he wasn't a presenter, but his name was referenced in like a demonstration with his photo. So it was neat. But I see Workflow as like the shortcut to, you know, shortcuts to make Siri better for the people that want it now. And then domains, you know, Siri Kit domains are not going away. Like, I guess they're continuing to add to those. That's like the long game, but nobody wants to wait that long for Siri to get more comprehensive. Like, adding one or two domains a year is not going to get us there. This is like the shortcut, you know, to now a lot more stuff can work with Siri that maybe never would have been included in a domain. I don't know. And also the way that they're surfacing suggestions, of what you'll be able to do with Siri shortcuts, at least in the keynote and demonstration. I don't think you have to be a power user to go and like discover this and build it yourself. Like, I think iOS will, based on habit, recommend a stuff that makes sense for you, you know?
Yeah, like the single action things, like the individual items, like send a message to, you know, your spouse. They're going to surface that in various places automatically. The thing that's like the power user is where you combine them together, right? Mm-hmm. And that'll be done through the dedicated shortcuts app, which isn't available yet. But the suggestion stuff, that can appear in Spotlight. Like right now, I have a spot. If you open Spotlight on the iPhone, it says send a message to Zach, which is probably because I do it loads, so it shows up there. But that's pretty cool. And they'll show it on the lock screen in certain situations. Like if they know you're going to work, they'll show you, you know, instant directions to work and stuff. And they've done some of this before, but it's rebuilding on it. They're also bringing the Siri shortcuts to the watch on the Siri Phase. So mm-hmm. this is their answer to expanding the Siri Phase with third parties, right? You can put shortcuts on the Siri Phase and developers can say these shortcuts are relevant at these times of day and these significant events, and it will all flow in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are. It's not just about this secret like code word system. They are like exposing them visually as well, that you can just kind of tap on and do things.
Yeah, and under the hood, so I'm curious about how this works because it helps me understand like what it can and can't do. And I'm looking and, you know, I'm seeing in the settings already, and like you said in Spotlight, how it recommends things like actions within apps. Is what's behind that? Is it NS user activity? Is that what it's called?
Right. There's two main API head. There's NS user activity, and then there's intents. Confusingly, sort of related to intensive domains, but not.
Okay.
NS user activity supports launching apps into a certain state.
Mm. It's like a snapshot of what the app is doing.
Yes, yeah. The intents are for the more complicated stuff. Like on, you could do a user activity of being on a particular website, because a lot of the suggestions I see at the moment are for like websites that I browse to.
Yeah.
And that's probably backed by user activity of I've gone to this website. It can show that in the UI, and you get on with your day, and you tap on it, and it launches Safari to the website. Things like the inline responses and stuff, that'll be more handled by like the intents frameworks, and that
requires doing something. It's not just like a snapshot, but it's more of an action.
Yes, because and the user activity stuff has existed in iOS before, because that's the same thing that's used for handoff, and so all of those things will be very easily portable to the new system. And in fact, if you look on like the settings for shortcuts, you can already see some third-party apps in there, like my Visual Codes app, which shows QR codes. I haven't touched it, right? It's still an iOS 11 application, but it surfaces the user activities for the individual QR codes that you've set up, so you can make shortcuts for them today without a developer doing anything at all.
When you ask Siri to remind me about this, like say you're in a specific email in the Mail app, is that user activity?
That probably, but that remind me about this is not exposed to third parties, I don't think.
Oh, so. Okay. Yeah.
So, what I do want to address here is people are saying they can use this now to like talk to Spotify, right? Mm-hmm. And have Spotify come through Siri. And this is kind of true because you can, once Spotify updates, right, they'll be able to allow you to make shortcuts that can play songs and play albums. But for every one of those commands, you'll have to do it in advance. You have to go into Spotify, set up a shortcut for playing your playlist or whatever, and then activating that through voice. And that won't be fine for, like, if you've got a playlist that you start every day, right? You could set up a shortcut for it, and then every day of the week now, you can just say play Spotify, you know, Beats or whatever you've called the playlist, and it could go off and do it. What you're not going to get is, like, the domain stuff where you can ask the music app, you can play anything in the world, you can play albums you've never heard before, right? You can say any song name. You're not going to be able to do that through Siri shortcuts, because the query can't be variable. It's fixed to, like, what you make it in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's more, I mean, that's what I'm thinking of it as, like, shortcuts is, like, you put it together yourself, and it's limited to, you know, kind of what is supported. But then long-term, Siri kit domains is what's more, like natural language comprehensive.
Yeah, that's more what you think of when you think of as an assistant that just understands you, right?
Yeah.
Not I've set up this list of 100 different things in advance and I can call them off and do it really quickly, mm-hmm. Now, which is what this is.
Yeah. Now, with that being said,
which is good.
Yeah, I'm super thrilled to get to use this stuff. Like, in beta 1, it's too early now to try anything out in any meaningful way. But say whenever this stuff ships, I am excited about what it's going to be able to do. In a way that I never used workflow in a serious way that I relied on it. I have a few workflow actions set up now that I do use, but nothing that if it went away, I would admit you know, not like, and nothing that I use day to day either. But this seems like, you know, enough stuff is exposed that wasn't before, that it's going to be cool. It's going to be good. You know, and the Siri aspect of it is just amazing. I'm looking forward to it.
And I want to call out here that despite them moving on in the keynote, they did actually teach Siri about some new stuff. Like if you go onto the iOS 12 page, it will tell you more about all these different features. And so they've added motorsports into Siri. They've added food knowledge from like a USDA database, which I assume is some, you know, official database, and you can ask it for like calories and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You can bring up passwords. If you say, Siri, what's my YouTube password? It will take you to the passwords thing in iCloud Keychain. And translation, they've added a little more translation pairs. Like before, it was only like 5 languages. Now they're going to add up to 40. So they have advanced like the Siri underlying knowledge. They just didn't talk about that stuff.
Right. This was the start of the show because this is a big shift.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And then that was kind of the Siri section and the keynote covered. They moved on to app updates, or as Susan the presenter called them, app dates.
Was that intentional or was that?
I believe that was intentional.
Did she say it more than once?
She's only said it once.
Okay.
But I think the way that she said it was like she was intentionally saying.
She did a hand gesture, like a pose, and said app dates. Yeah.
App dates.
Yeah. She presented at the education event too.
Yep.
And
she presented Apple News originally, like the first time they announced Apple News. Yeah. She was the person that did it.
Yeah. I find that she has a great opportunity to improve her presentation skills.
I thought she was better today than the education event.
Yeah.
But I think she could be better.
I still thought that there were people that we hadn't seen on stage before that were just aced it. And this is...
Yeah, the woman they had for the Siri demo, she was really good. I liked her.
Yeah. So app dates. Let's talk about app dates.
Right. They added a sidebar to Apple News. They changed the browse tab a bit. They have a brand new Stocks app, which integrates Apple News. She was very excited about that. It only seems to show you news from curated sources. So although Apple News is all about like personalization, it doesn't seem like if you add like a financial analyst blog to Apple News, I don't think it shows up in Stocks. It's still just like a curated...
I think it's the business section.
Here are the main publications.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they brought Stocks to the iPad because everyone wants weather on the iPad, so they brought Stocks instead.
And like...
unsurprisingly, it's like a two-up view with Stocks on the left and like News on the right. And
yeah,
it's nice. One weird thing is Stocks on the iPad is white, whereas on the iPhone it's black themed. Well, there you go. I don't know why they did that.
Well, what I'll say about Stocks and showing Stocks and News is like it's clever. It's a nice way to present Apple News in there, but it's not groundbreaking. I mean, like Yahoo Stocks has done this for, like, I think dozens of apps have done this for a long time of showing Stocks with
and
news.
Even the Stocks app had news in it before.
Yeah, it just wasn't
Apple News.
Right.
But it's a nice redesign. Stocks app was cool.
Uh-huh.
They've redone voice memos and made it... The UI for it's slightly saner. It syncs over iCloud now, which is nice, because before you could only sync to iTunes on the computer, which is very old-fashioned. And voice memos is now on iPad. Who cares about music memos? No one mentioned it. But
they even used the example of a popular use of voice memos is to record instruments and vocals for song ideas.
Indeed. So yeah, that's on iPad now, so if you want to use that, that's cool. And the thing that we saw kind of previewed in 11.3... is that iBooks is now Apple Books, and it's completely redesigned with a brand new UI, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it is an excellent use of starting with a blank white layer and adding realistic elements that are not like gaudy, but that just really pop. And it's the same artwork for these books has become it's closer to the old days where iBooks was like this super real thing, but it's not that. It's not a fake shelf or anything. It's like the books themselves are what impresses, not the background behind it. You know?
Yeah, like the overall app is still, you know, very quite flat, but they've got nice use of gradients and stuff. Like, the Chrome isn't skeuomorphic, but they just made, like, the content, the books, you know, look closer to an actual book rather than just, like, flat artwork.
Yeah, and using the font that they're using now, just in the Books app, it's clever. It makes it feel more like, you know, the reading environment.
Yeah, and they have, like, custom store layouts. Like, the old iBook store was just, like, a web page. Now I think they've got, like, a native store, and it looks... It's completely bespoke to, like, the App Store or the iTunes Store, and it looks really nice. You can, like, zoom into different cards and zip around. And when we heard about Books getting a modern revamp with, like, Reading Now and For You and all these kind of, like, recommendation stuff, I was worried that it would be, like, a formulaic reinterpretation of the App Store design, which is basically what podcasts became, right?
Yep.
Like, I'd call podcasts pretty sterile, a reinterpretation of the App Store. And it's fine. But it's like, you know, it doesn't really have any character. The Books app definitely has some good pizzazz to it. Like, on the Reading Now, they'll render a 2-page view of the current page you're in as, like, the thumbnail. Like, it's just really nicely put together.
Yeah, I will say this. Having browsed around and like, looking at this app, the function is the same, but it makes my iPhone feel nicer just because the design of this app is so nice. And the same for the iPad. It just feels like, you know... It's a better experience reading it in Apple Books than, say, Kindle or something.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like a bookshelf, right? Like, it's not skeuomorphic. And even the iOS 11 Books app is more skeuomorphic in that it actually had a shelf. It was just a flat shelf, the 3 per rows, but it definitely was supposed to evoke a shelf. The library now in Apple Books is just like a grid, and they've just added enough detail to the actual, like, layouts and rendering of the books, and some really careful iconography and glyphs to, like, actually make it stand out. So I hope, like, again, the Books app looks great, and it's like, then you open podcasts and it looks meh, and then you open all these other apps and it looks meh. Like, what they do in, like, the Books app is that kind of theme is what I want them to do, like, across the whole OS. Every app doesn't need, like, a custom font, but that kind of thinking, that kind of, like, you know, bespoke niceties and finesse is what needs to go be, like, percolated across everything.
Someone took their time with this. It wasn't rushed out.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. And then this was like the big shock that we referenced earlier. On CarPlay now, you can have third-party navigation apps. Like,
it was like the
Waze
most
Google Maps.
Like soft reference ever, but it was just like, and at the end of all of this, because we're talking about apps, CarPlay, you can already do X, Y, and Z. And now with iOS 12, you can use third-party map apps, like Waze and Google Maps. And they showed an Asian map I didn't know about. This is something that I probably won't use. I don't use Waze or Google Maps now for the most part, unless I'm in a pinch and like Apple Maps isn't cutting it. But by default, I use the built-in map. CarPlay support is a big factor of that. But the main thing that I got excited about this for is because people ask me all the time, when is it going to work? You know, please, Apple, do this. And I just thought they never would. And here we are.
And the way the API works for this is, you know, the apps themselves are still going to look a lot like the Maps app on CarPlay, right? Like, because the way the API works is the underlying map is like an arbitrary canvas, and Waze and Google and anyone else can draw the map tiles however they want, right? So they can have their own branding. And then on top of the actual underlying map, the controls, like zooming in, search, all of that, that's more like a template library, kind of like WatchKit in a way. Like, Apple lets you lay them out in different ways and they can kind of choose what's in the navigation bar. But like, they couldn't just have this completely different search icon. It has to be like the standard search screen and search icon. And that abstracts away some of the functionality, especially on CarPlay, where you can have cars with touch screens, you can have cars with dials, you can have cars with like a surface. And they showed an example where the keyboard... Obviously, if you're in a car with a touchscreen, it just shows like a grid of, you know, it shows a proper keyboard. You can tap the letters away. If you have a dial, it goes more like tvOS, where all the letters go in a line and you like rotate to go along the grid and select like that way. And all of that stuff is abstracted away from maps and third-party app developers, like Google Maps and Waze and third-party app developers. That's all controlled by Apple still. So the apps will still very feel like CarPlay things.
Yeah.
It's just all the data sources and the navigation and the routing and all those overlays are coming from, you know, a new a new provider, which is basically what everyone wants.
Now, I am curious, though, like if people with Google Maps, it seems more straightforward. Like maybe the data there will be better and, you know, enough that people will say, I am using Google Maps, even if it's a weird version of it. With Waze, some of what Waze does, like, you know, showing you, I guess, where like police are or where you should like change your route and different things. I wonder if enough of that stuff will be stripped away that Waze on CarPlay won't feel like Waze on your iPhone and people will just still won't use it. I'm thinking that might be the case. We'll see.
Yeah, I watched the session on CarPlay because I was really interested in what they were going to do here. It is reasonably flexible, but like, you know how on CarPlay you have the overlay of the next turn, right?
Yeah.
And how that looks. It's still going to look like that, but it'll be powered by Waze.
Yeah.
Right, and they have concessions for showing alerts and showing little information dialogues. So I think most of the Waze features, like police up ahead, I still think they're going to be able to show that stuff. But like the interface for it and the controls is very standardized, so you won't have like a bright blue theme for the Waze app, for instance.
Yeah.
And the zoom button won't be like a rotating dial; it'll still be the up and down arrows.
Yeah.
I think it's flexible enough that people will be all the features will be supported.
Hmm.
So I'm confident there that people are going to get exactly what they want.
Cool, we'll see. Next up is this whole theme around digital health, really, right?
Yeah, and they kind of combine this like new changes to Do Not Disturb and notifications and the new screen time stuff. Do Not Disturb has this option called Do Not Disturb During Bedtime. That's the
natural. Yeah.
Yeah, and it basically like blanks out the lock screen. You don't see any of your notifications on the lock screen. And then when you wake up in the morning, it says, good morning, and it has, like, the weather, and then nothing else until you say, you know, like, I'm ready to go for the day. So the idea is, if you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't get distracted by loads of notifications, you know, lock screen, and don't go back to sleep.
Yeah, that's happened to me a number of times, especially with working with people, you know, internationally. And also, just that wake-up screen with the weather, it just looks nice. Like, everyone should get that anyway.
I want the weather without Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks nice.
But, yeah, exactly. I just want the weather complication on the lock screen, please. But yeah. No, you have to use Do Not Disturb mode during bedtime.
You have to earn it with a better night's
sleep. Yeah. So that's a cool idea. I probably won't turn that on. What I will use is a Do Not Disturb Until, which you can access by 3D touching on the control center Do Not Disturb button. And that lets you set up automatically turning on Do Not Disturb while you're at someone's house. Like if you go to a friend's house, you can turn on Do Not Disturb if you're and then you can do that for, you know, and when you leave, it will use like the geographic range to automatically turn you off.
Yeah, the example that they used was a parent pushing their kid at the park in a swing, and the kid went flying off the swing because the parent was like looking at their phone. It was a comical example, but one I can relate to, not because I've done that, but just because you want to go to the park, you want to be in the moment, and everything's still following you around, alerts and everything. So,
and if you have a calendar event, like if you put all your meetings into calendar, it will show up there too. Like you can Do Not Disturb until the calendar event ends. So you can, it's quite intelligent. And if you don't have a calendar event, it just says Do Not Disturb for 1 hour.
Yeah.
So this is more like ad hoc than the schedules you can set up.
It's good stuff.
That's cool.
And that works the same way on the iPhone as it does on the watch. I'm not sure if they really showed that a lot, but I've seen that on the watch so far.
And then they kind of did the big thing on notifications, which is now you can do group notifications, and it brings all the banners from the same app into a little stack, and you can expand and collapse it.
I like
this.
This
is something I think loads of people have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like begging for it, but I know it's like a huge request. So,
what do you think about the way the banners look? The way there's like, you know, kind of goes into they're themselves.
Like, yeah, they're like zooming out, aren't they?
Yeah.
I like how it looks. What I don't like is when you expand them, you still get a lot of redundancy. Like if you have a message from you three times, when you expand the group, it will still say, message, is that cool? Here's the message. New banner, message, is that cool? Here's the message. Message, is that cool? Here's the banner. Like the redundant names and stuff, I wish they'd collapse down into like a single banner. And they don't do that.
Yeah. One thing they can do with messages now is you can clear everything easier without 3D touch, which is probably a sign that middle iPhone later this year won't have 3D touch.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you get if you get like a load of notifications in one app, you can just swipe them all away in one go. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They also have this like deliver quietly system where you can make a notification mode which only goes to notification center and it doesn't make a noise.
Yeah, this one I'm curious about. The whole thing with alerts now is it's just so different than what it was that I've got to get a feel for how or if I want to use any of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want a notification that you don't get a buzz for but fills up your notification center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when I'd use that. Like, if I don't want a notification, I'll just put a badge on the app and go into the app. Like,
it would be something that you might not need to ever see, but maybe you come across. And for me, I'm not sure that I have an alert of that category, just because of so far already managed my alerts so much that I don't think there's like in between case. But
this is probably more for mainstream people who don't customize anything about their notifications.
Yeah, because most people have crazy alerts.
Yes. And Siri will pop up and say, you don't use this app, but it sends you 10,000 alerts a month. Do you want to turn them off? Right. And you can just say yes from the lock screen and it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more aimed at, you know, people that don't manage things meticulously. So not so much the audience of this podcast, but, you know, the audience of the wider iPhone user for sure. The big thing here is the screen time stuff. And this is the direct response to all of the, you know, groups and investors saying Apple needs to do more about iPhone addiction and parental controls. And they have a very, very comprehensive system here.
they're not just like dipping their toe in the water. They're diving in on this.
Yeah, you get like a weekly notification that gives you a summary of how you use your device, not just which apps you used, but which categories of apps you use a lot. You get how many notifications you got per day and per week, how many times you pick up your phone per hour. Like, this is the thing that I wasn't expecting, is that they not only show you how much you use apps too much, they show you how much you use your overall phone too much, which implicates themselves, right? Like, for me, it says I pick up my phone once every 8 minutes at the moment, which is like, wow, that's a lot. Do you know what I mean? And then the notification one is kind of weird. Like, messages is always going to be like the top because you talk to people all the time and people send you messages. Like, I don't really... If you have a number of... I guess it's just giving awareness to how many apps send you a notification. But from there, you can turn them off. And the big thing is, if you have a family sharing setup, you can see, and you're the parent, you can see the activity report of your children if it's turned on. So you can kind of monitor your children's use of the iPhone and how long they're spending on certain apps and at what times of the day. And they give you the information, and then optionally you can set limits and restrictions. So by default, it just tracks the data, and then they give it up to each individual person whether they want to like change their behavior or enforce limits, which I think is the right approach, right? So they're not like nannying you by default.
Yeah.
But if you want to turn on the self-control features or, you know, help your children, you can do it.
For pickups, I've got, and this is a different scenario this past, the last 7 days, because I've been traveling versus at home, so I'm not sure how it would compare to a normal routine. But 263 pickups per day, 1,838 in total. This is counting since Monday with the beta, so not even a full week. Once every 3 minutes. That's
3 minutes? Oh.
And then alerts, notifications, 1,359. Around 194 per day. And usually I have all Tweetbot alerts off, but I've had them on since I've been away from my computer. Same for mail. So some of these things are a little same for Instagram as well. So some of these are a little bit different than what they usually would be.
And also, it says picked up phone, right? So yeah. I assume if you look at a notification on your watch, that doesn't count.
Yeah. And one thing that's nice here is that it's per device, and you can see it across devices. Like, if you have this on your iPad, you can see it on your iPhone. The stuff with seeing what your kids' habits, like, that's going to be useful, I think. The allowances that they showed, like, this is stuff that I've, you know, I would have liked to have had so far, and I'll use it now. You know, I'll play around.
Yeah, so you can set, you're not just setting an overall usage time on the device. You can say these set apps you can only use for 2 hours a day or whatever, like.
And they did the obvious thing of, like, categories, which is, like, the App Store, which we discussed before. Like, why don't they do this? What now they do?
Yeah, so like if you don't want your child spending if you don't want your child using your phone in the middle of the night, you can set downtime and the phone just won't work unless you give it special authorization. You can set exceptions, so like phone calls and stuff, and the phone app you can still access, but you can turn off like all social networking apps in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the day, you could say only 4 hours maximum of social networking, for instance. Mm-hmm. Or for yourself, you could say, I only want to be, you know, doing email for 3 hours a day. And the UI that when you reach the limit, it lets you override it, right? It says like, give me an extra 15 minutes or ignore for now. So it doesn't like prescribe it by force. It's just kind of nudging you to go and do something different.
Yeah, it's comprehensive enough that I think it's useful. It's not like they half baked it. You know, it looks like they've really did a lot of work here. Stuff like being able to have my daughter's iPad have a bedtime will be useful. Being able to do allowances will be clever. It's like, you know, because as a parent, you know, the most effective thing is to be there and monitor at all times. But realistically, I think for a lot of people, having tools to help with this will be a huge benefit. So I'm going to put the beta. Sure. I'm going to put the beta on my daughter's iPad and get to work here.
That's funny.
So then messages next, huh?
Messages. An emoji. You can stick your tongue out now, and the an emojis have tongues.
They go in or out. I don't think you can move them around. Maybe that's next year. But
it's like very binary.
Yeah.
You can have them shown or you can have them not shown. They have a new set of four. They have Ghost, Koala, Tiger, and T-Rex. I was very upset that the T-Rex doesn't actually spit fire. It's just like a green version of the unicorn. But there you go. The big thing here is the Memoji, which is you make your own avatar and you can animate it like an Animoji.
This was a good demo.
This was a good demo. I said when Samsung did their AR emoji thing that it was very creepy and it's a bit weird. And I'm kind of on the edge here. Apple have done a much better job of making them look more like dolls than reality, and like it's cartoony and more in the style of an actual emoji, whereas Samsung kind of feels like they're heading more towards realism and really missed the mark, so it feels weird. Like these are definitely a lot more cute. And there's a lot more customization in what you can do. And what I think is really clever is that there's no like female, male, you know, there's no gender associated with this. You just go through each page and you just pick what hairstyle you want. You pick what your face is like. You pick your glasses. You can change. You can make it look really like you, or you can make it look like completely different. They even have skin color like purple. So you make yourself look like a genie if you want to, or like bright green, like. There's an almost overwhelming number of things that you can tweak here.
Yeah. Have you been using this since the beta?
I made one. It was fun to make it. I haven't sent it to anybody.
This is kind of like the scooters in San Jose for me. At first, I didn't want to do it. I was being grumpy about it. And I was telling Greg, who was with us from NFI Mac, this feels like work to have to go through all these screens and like build this thing. For what purpose? And then eventually I just did it. I put in the 2 minutes it took, and I've had a lot of fun with it. Mainly because they're not just in messages. If they were only in messages in the classic Animoji sense, then it wouldn't be as compelling. But because you can do so much with them outside of messages, or even with the new effects camera within messages, where you can you know, combine it on your body and your, you know, around you, then it's really neat. I like it.
Yeah, you can put your own emoji on your own head and take a picture.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's cute. It's kind of like, you know, Bitmoji stuff from Snapchat, just in a different way. The only thing I don't really have is like an automatic, you know, make me one that looks like me using the camera.
I think that's problematic, though. Then if it makes one that you find offensive, it's not good.
It's almost like they'd rather not do it at all than do it and like offend some people. If they made your face really fat and you've got a thin face, like if it gets it wrong, then it's probably more annoying.
Yeah.
Than useful.
Mm-hmm.
But
the one thing that I caught from the presentation was you've got in the notes that the person's name was Kelsey Peterson. I remember Kelsey because it's my wife's name. It was it was just neat.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if people are going to use these a lot. Like, again, it's like the animoji thing. It's fun to do for a bit, and then you kind of forget about them.
I feel better about these than animoji.
You think you use them more?
Yeah, I feel better about these than animoji. Yeah.
Okay.
It's more personal. Yeah. It's not like one size fits all. It's like, maybe someone else has one just like mine. The guy from the keynote video probably does, but the my Memoji feels like mine, you know. And a friend of mine that's on the beta has also been sending me his, and he was a big Bitmoji person, and I've never used Bitmoji really, and I've obviously never used a Samsung thing, but this is something that I've had fun with so far. And it's like right now, especially in early days when like people don't know about it yet, when you surprise someone with it, like I don't think the person needs to be on a beta to see it, right?
No, it's just, it sends a video, just like Animoji does.
Like on FaceTime they do, but just like if you're using messages, they don't.
Yeah.
And I think it's charming. And I find it a lot more like warm and personal than Animoji were.
Yeah. And obviously because you can customize stuff, there's more depth there, right? Like Animoji, you go through all 12 that they had at the start and then you're kind of done with it.
Yeah. Plus as a person and not a character. And they hadn't even done like one of the smiley faces, had they? Or?
No, there's no generic smiley.
Yeah, so I was
when you jump into the app, you get like this yellow skin tone with no hair or anything.
Right? Right.
It's not like an emoticon.
Yeah,
circle.
I was picturing the Apple Watch smiley stickers that from Digital Touch when that was brand new. But yeah,
you know they're gone now.
Really?
Yeah, in WatchOS 5, they don't exist anymore. The hands, the face, the what was the other one? Hearts? They're all gone.
Yeah.
Rip. Sad. I mean, one day it'd be cool if they could replace them with like an animoji, like an emoji thing.
That's true. Yeah, animoji is the future.
Yeah, but they haven't done it yet. As you mentioned, they do put these animoji, memoji stickers. All of that comes to FaceTime now, and they finally done it. You can do group video chats with FaceTime.
More than two people.
More than three people.
More than four people.
You can do up to 32 people. Apparently.
This was one of those moments where. I felt like, whoa, you know, like, because if you would have had me guess, I would have guessed a low number, like less than 15, you know, maybe less
probably
than,
pick four.
Yeah, right. I would have been like eight to 12 tops. And the way they've done it, I think, is really manageable too.
Yeah, because you say 32 and you think, is it like 32 tiny little thumbnails on the screen at once?
Tiny heads, yeah.
It's more like four people at a time, and then everyone else kind of joins in at the bottom, because they have like up to four tiles that kind of float around bigger, and then as you speak it, the tiles enlarge, and then everyone else in the call is in this like strip at the bottom that you can like scroll through.
Yeah, the thing is like you could probably test this and break it if all 32 people are talking over each other. That's like in person too, that there's got to be some element of, you know, how people interact with each other in real life, also this way. And the cue here is that as you speak, your face appears as one of the tiles, and so then you kind of leave the floor to that person. And hopefully there's some direction in the conversation, if you need to have 32 people.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing here, right, is that most people are going to group chat with, what, like three or four?
Yeah.
And so it's actually going to be manageable.
It's like 32 is a big enough number that's almost unlimited in any scenario that I can see myself in. Which is good, because you wouldn't want it to be like group FaceTime, when can you do more, you know? I don't think we're going to be wanting more for a while.
It's not like 5 GB iCloud storage.
Right. And it's cool because, like, you know, FaceTime to my mom is nice, FaceTime to my brother is nice, but FaceTime to my mom and brother and my sister can jump on the call and fall off at any point. It's like, I think it's been really, really useful.
Yeah, and they've made it more ad hoc. Like, you can be in a group chat on messages and just have, like, a FaceTime button that you can join and leave, like, freely. It's not as, you know, like a regime where you call someone, they have to answer.
Yeah, like, I do wonder if the person that initiates, if they need to stick around, like, the way Skype has one host and other people can come and go, or if that person basically hands it off to the next two people if they need to.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. And unfortunately, in Beta 1, it's very, very buggy, so it's hard to get a good grip of how it works.
I've had a FaceTime call with two other people so far.
Yeah, me and you did one, and even just me and you, like, that's the same number of people. We're just kind of trying out like the animoji and the memoji effects and stuff, but for me it was very like crashy and stuff freezes a lot, so yeah.
I
refine it.
I was on LTE on battery and had a FaceTime call with Mark Gurman and Mike Beasley, And we were all digging through the effects and everything, and it was very delightful.
That's cool. I haven't
tried with more than two other people yet, but
It's on iPhone, iPad, and Mac.
Indeed.
So that's a good sign.
And the watch can answer as an audio call, which is nice.
That is nice. Yeah. And this is still all end-to-end encrypted. Even if you're talking with 32 people, it's end-to-end encrypted. And I've researched, and I cannot find another group calling service that can support that many people and still be end-to-end encrypted. Like, you can normally get one-on-one, which is what FaceTime was before.
And there's
got to be a trick somewhere along the line here.
Maybe. And that probably informs the 32 people number, too, is that they could say 50. They could say 30, but they said 32. It's like traditional FaceTime plus 30. And maybe the encryption is a part of that.
Yeah, I think also the fact that you can only see like four people big is probably a technical thing as well. Like the people in the roster probably only send like a really, really low resolution video. So you don't have as much encrypted data to send around. And it's only really four people that are actually sending like proper high quality feeds.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see, because it does work on Mac, correct?
Yeah.
Having a full screen, massive display where you can kind of actually see all 32 people. Not big, but that the small tiles, the roster, is not scrolled out of the way. It's actually big enough to see like all you know, more than a few people down there, and see how that works.
But yeah, I'm really excited for just group FaceTime full stop.
No kidding.
The effects and stuff, but you know, like three or four people, that's what loads of people want.
I find the effects delightful. So.
That kind of sums up iOS 12.
Which was the first hour of the keynote. I was thinking like, oh man, this is not good. First, I thought like all this stuff, watchOS is before like Mac. Maybe it's a pretty big deal. But then I was just thinking like we're an hour in, and it wasn't like exactly a 2 hour keynote, so it wasn't like perfectly half of it. But iOS was a large part of it.
Yeah, I think the keynote ended at like 2 hours 20. Like it ran over a bit.
Yeah.
But watchOS 5.
watchOS 5. Kevin Lynch presented, and I had so many moments of just like, all right, here we go. It was a gift to me.
It was good. They talked about expanding the workout stuff and being more connected. That was kind of like the way they framed it. They have competitions, so you can challenge a friend to a 7-day challenge and get new awards when the person wins. And when you get the activity sharing notifications every day, you can scroll down and they have like the ongoing chart of how many points people have got. That's going to be really fun to play around with. They added yoga and hiking as dedicated workouts. Mm-hmm. So before they were in like the other section, but that only just pretends, like that just uses the a generic algorithm of being like a brisk pace walk. So now you should get more accurate heart rate and calorie readings and stuff
Kind of the way they said it in the keynote was that it considers the rest of your day too, and I think kind of compares that. So
they use like baselines to like kind of work it out and stuff.
Yeah.
They have pace, like alerts now. So if you're doing a run, you can say, I want to be going at this set speed. And if you slow down too much, it'll give you a buzz saying you need to speed up. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really useful if you're trying to like set goals, or if you want to do like a marathon in
your training,
a set time. Mm-hmm. Like you can just give it like, I want to do 10 minutes per, you know, 5 minutes per mile or whatever, and then actually stick to it. And it can give you like an ongoing update. I think that's a nice feature. They have automatic workout detection now, where it doesn't actually like start the workout for you, but it'll nudge you and say, it looks like you are working out and you haven't started a workout, do you want to start one, with like a pop-up. Mm-hmm. And you can press yes and go, and then similarly at the end, if you forget to end it, it will send up an alert saying, do you want to stop, and you can stop right there and then.
Yeah,
that helps like make it like a smart watch.
Yeah, you're not going to stop starting and stopping, but if you do forget, it will help out you, and it retroactively kind of gives you credit for when it thinks it began. I think for me, I'll not want to rely on that, but it helps people that have forgotten to start and stop.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Like you don't want to trust it and then it not pick it up,
right?
So it's more for people to just like straight up forget. Mm-hmm. Which is probably quite a lot of people, because I bet a lot of people that own the watch only use the activity rings and don't ever bother actually starting like a proper workout.
Yeah, and it tries to know what you've started too. So it works for a few workout types. I have had the experience of like forgetting to stop a workout very early, but I had the experience. Going back a little bit, the competition. So before Apple's done like their wellness program of like internal fitness challenges, have been through an app called Challenges that uses the activity rings, but the Challenges app and service. These competitions are like you pick a person, and for 1 week you compete with them. Like I can compete with you for a week. I'm competing with Greg right now, and every day we have to do things to get points. And there are new awards that you can unlock by person and by completing one. So, like, for example, the reward for the competition is I get a medal called Victory Over Greg that I can't wait to get. And you can see, like, how many times you've gotten it. And all of the activity app, the awards section has been redone. Have you looked at that yet?
Yes, the awards app, the awards tab in the activity app is so much better now.
Yeah, there are all these medals for things that before were just like achievements, like your first cycling workout, first elliptical workout, a record of those types. And it's organized differently now. It is some of the awards are the recent ones are like much larger. It's nice. It wasn't even mentioned in the keynote, but it's something that you can find in iOS 12.
Yeah, and it kind of feels more like a personalized tab. Like it's almost like a for you awards because it has like the recent ones at the top and then like some competition suggestions and then the limited edition ones, which is like the Heart Month Challenge stuff that has its own section. Mm-hmm. Then you have like a separate section for the monthly ones, which is the algorithmic ones that depends on what you did in the previous month. So like they've given it a much better layout than just like a grid of, you know, little medals.
And even just very detailed, like if you use the Close Your Rings ones, you get the date of the record, the calories that set the record, for example, how many times you've had this award. So it's nice. They haven't added, like right now, 1,000 move goals is the highest kind of award you get. They haven't increased that yet, but at least they're giving their attention here.
I also think they've just updated the rendering of the medals, like when you click on them. I swear they look slightly different too.
I think so too.
Yeah, they look cool.
Yeah.
And then we're doing a pre-WatchOS 1 feature.
This has got to be a record of like, you know, how we talked about, you know, HomePod took a while to get to market, Apple Watch originally, you know, AirPlay 2. Walkie-talkie's got to be the record of like things officially shown, said in a keynote, shown on Apple.com, and then not released until now. Walkie-talkie.
Yeah. So this was on the website before the watch shipped.
Like Tim Cook, I think, said you can use it as a walkie-talkie. I think he said that. But it was definitely on Apple.com as a screenshot.
It was definitely on the website, yeah.
Yeah. It was like description, screenshot. I think it had like the icon and the interface. And now.
And the interface doesn't look like what they've shipped now. Because the interface back then was like a little speckles of blue, like almost like a waveform in the air.
Digital touch style.
Yeah.
Like ephemeral, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And what the walkie-talkie app will look like is a big yellow circle that says talk.
Right. Right.
Because it's not actually in the current watch beta. It just says coming soon if you try and watch it, which is quite funny.
It's the first splash screen for a coming soon app I've seen. They kind of pitch this as like enabled by LTE. Even though you don't need LTE to use it, like you know, you need a network connection, but you could have used it on with your phone connection the whole time or Wi-Fi. But yeah, I guess they decided let's add it in there.
And like you set up a friend relationship, like they accept your request to walkie-talkie, and then I think after that you press talk, you speak, and then the other person's watch just starts talking
at like any time.
Yeah, like you don't have to approve it after the first time.
Yeah, like you only have certain watch friends as walkie-talkie, but there seems like, you know, we can't test it yet, obviously, because it's not ready yet, but it seems like if your watch is muted, then maybe you'd want to have just like a tap. But they want to get away from the play model of like it's a recording, which you can already send a voice recording and then play it. They want this to be like instant, you know?
Yeah, like you can tap talk, then the other person hears it. It's almost like a call, but you don't set up a call. It's like drop-in, right? Like, but audio only.
Yeah. So I think this will take – I would not be surprised if they change the model of how this works You know, like right now it's super instant. Once you approve it, you're in. I wouldn't be surprised if they put up some more parameters around that in the future.
They'll definitely have an option, at least, like you don't have to have real-time chat. Like they'll definitely have an option where you can wait to accept to hear what someone says.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this...
There's definitely going to be some situations where you could be doing... You could be just like at dinner and then your random friend just... The sound of your random friend just starts talking from your dinner plate because it's coming off your wrist. Like definitely some awkwardness potential.
You get the next tell chirp, and then your wife starts talking. Exactly. But my favorite thing about this is that it's once again watch-to-watch communication that you can't have otherwise. Like, I don't think you're going to get these on your iPhone, and I don't think you'd be able to do it without a watch. Which was how Digital Touch was at first, and then they brought it to iOS, and they kind of hit it.
They probably do that here too. to messages.
That's true.
And then on the Siri Watch Face, which I know you're a big fan of, they've added sports scores, maps commute times, and it will even show your heart rate when you finish a workout. Mm-hmm. And then the big thing here is the third-party integration from the Siri shortcuts, like what we mentioned earlier, and they showed examples of Nike Plus Run Club, directions from City Mapper, stuff like that.
Yeah. So I've seen so far, you know how after certain workouts you see your heart rate, like where it was after 1 minute and then where it was after 2 minutes?
Yeah, the recovery.
Yeah, I've seen that as a tile on the watch face, which is something before – I just love the Siri watch face now. Like it's getting to be like how I think of the watch itself. But before I would never go and like look for that information. But now it's just like on my wrist after a workout, and not forever. Like it's just temporary. It's just there until as long as it's relevant, and then it goes away. I've seen my resting heart rate appear as a tile so far. I see music is suggesting that I play a song. I'm not sure I don't know like why they're suggesting this song specifically. So some of it's weird. Like I've always turned off news, photos, stocks, breathe. So I think there'll still be customization that I want to do here, but. I mean, you can see like your favorite team sports scores now, from by way of the TV app, which is a little bit odd, but it's good stuff. And then the third party stuff is, you know, kind of a wait and see how it when it ships, but I'm excited about it.
And they have a new theme, right, for the Siri face.
You can choose between the multicolored Siri background or like a grayscale background now. Which looks nicer with, I guess, if you're like trying to dress up the watch or you want like a dark theme. Yeah.
But they didn't, interestingly, have any like brand new watch faces.
Yeah. My thought on that, I mean, they showed the Pride face complete that day to watchOS 4, which you could get early if you knew how. But that wasn't with watchOS 5. There wasn't any like new concepts, which may be like watchOS 6. Custom watch faces, you know, save it for that. One of my thoughts was that, you know, the rumor is that the Series 4 watch will be a redesign and that the screen is 15% larger. You know, we think like the same casing size, but just less bezel. And maybe they have watch faces that are only offered on that model that take advantage of the bigger display or, you know, the kind of infinity effect. Because we saw this year with watchOS 5, there were new watch faces. There was a Siri watch face. And a few others, but the Explorer watch face was only on the LTE models of the Series 3, so I could see it being like hardware, you know, specific.
They did some minor tweaks to the existing roster watch faces, like the Solar face now has complications, which it never had before.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
Which kind of, I loved seeing their like new watch face design, so I was not very happy that they didn't have any there. Maybe they'll probably have another at least one exclusive one for the new watches in the fall. But
yeah, that was the only thing on my personal wish list that didn't come was new watch faces that I thought was obvious. That'd be like an easy reward. But with the Siri watch face, it has enough new function that I consider that a new watch face too.
Yeah, but how many people use the Siri face, right? Like I don't use it. So
I know. I think more and more though.
Way smaller for me.
I think as they add information to it, like for me, it took adding activity rings to the watch face, like as a tile. That's what got it, took it for me. So I think as they add more information, people might discover it. So it'll be interesting to see that what the default watch face is, you know, with new models.
This next thing has been playing my mind since they announced it. Like, the idea of this is so cool. It's called Race to Speak. And the idea is you can talk to Siri on the watch hands-free without saying the Hello Siri trigger phrase.
You don't say Siri and you don't say hey.
You just
say what you want to say. Which there's a toggle for it in beta, but you can't use it yet from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I've been chatting my watch for about 10 minutes straight on when the beta came out and decided that it's not enabled yet.
Yeah, it seems to be, like, I'm still using Siri and hey. It seems to be that they're relying on the gesture of, you know, twist and raise and come to your face. And, like, that's, they know that gesture is you talking to your watch. And that sometimes, you, like, if your watch is turned on, like, I guess your arm's on the table and you turn your wrist a little bit, that's not the same as rate, like, come to your face with it. And they think that they've got it figured out, that they can detect which is which and ignore, like, crosstalk in the room when the watch face is on and only do when you bring your watch to your face. We can't test it yet, though, so we don't know.
I'm fascinated by it, like, because I check the time and talk to somebody more often than, you know, quite often. Like, I'm raising my wrist, seeing what the time is while I'm still in the middle of a conversation. Like,
yeah.
And the cost of getting it wrong is so high. Like, you know, you just want to check the time and then suddenly the Siri modal UI pops up instead. It's like, no, I don't want this. But if they can do it right, then this is going to be like one of the best features ever, because for Siri, you don't have to ask complete questions. Like, you can just say 10-minute timer and it will set a 10-minute timer. Or you can say weather and it will show you the weather. Like, you don't have to say, what is the weather doing today? Like, you don't have to form a question. And if it just works, like, if you can just look at your watch and say something and it does it, like...
It's like you know what's shorter than Alexa? Nothing. Saying nothing is shorter than Alexa.
Yeah, I am so anxious to try this out because I can't imagine in my head how they can get this to work well. Like, they explained it, raising your wrist is a very strong signal, but there's still going to be a lot of times where you raise your wrist and you're not talking to Siri, but you're still talking, I think. And the fact that it's a toggle kind of makes me wonder that it's not going to work as well as it might do. Like,
well, I feel like that's just like a permissions thing. Like, I'm not sure that you can turn off.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
the other thing, right? Like, now the watch has 10 times more opportunity to record what you say and upload it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is such a crazy feature, even just for, like, the privacy implications of it. And
on the topic of
care about the privacy stuff. I want this feature to happen. But we come off, like, a week ago where the Amazon Echo accidentally heard to send a message to send an audio message to someone's friend, and then it basically sent the entire conversation that a family was having to someone and they didn't even know it was happening. And, like, to a lesser extent, you're going to run into the same kind of problems here if it isn't reliable and it doesn't work well.
Although, as an Echo Home, I'm skeptical that... Well, I know it happened, but I feel like you've got to miss a lot of cues. You've got to really be disengaged from what your speaker's saying, because it talks back to you and, like, it doesn't, like, silently say, are you sure? It's like, you know, it must have... It had been, like, turned the volume, like, way down or something. I don't know, but...
Yeah, it was... I'm so... So want to try this out, and I really,
really hope it
works. Sorry,
do you know if it's restricted? Like, if it's only on certain devices, on certain watches, or
they haven't said any asterisk or anything. And I looked on the product page for it because it doesn't have anything attached to it. So
yeah, because having the Siri voice on the Series 3 models, that helps, because then, you know, if it's going to do something, you'll hear it. But without
it could be restricted to Series 3. Yeah, but they haven't. I haven't seen anything that says it's not.
Yeah, I guess everyone would have a toggle, though. If you have a toggle, then you probably have it. One thing I was thinking was, you know, HomePod will... I'll talk to HomePod sometimes, and the watch will take over because it's the screen's turned on. And so if I'm able to talk to Siri in the watch without saying, hey, then I can save, hey, always for the HomePod. It's like almost having a different phrase.
Oh, you can turn off the trigger phrase on the watch.
If that's possible, yeah, because I mean, the only thing is that I think, like, hey, we'll still work with the watch, and so the same scenario of the watch catching it because my wrist is, like, you know, twisted and the screen comes on, so then it takes over. But I think it's,
you can turn
there.
That. There's a toggle to turn the hey off, though.
Yeah, but
watch.
Is it tied to raise to speak?
Ooh, you know, that's a good question. I think can you have one off and keep the other one on?
I think it might replace it.
This is, well, it's not in beta 1, but
The Targ was in beta one, I think. But
the Targ was in beta one. So if you find the settings up first, you can look like an idiot shouting at your watch for half an hour before you give up.
We both died.
I'm really, really, really want to try this out. And because they mentioned it so prominently on stage, they got to be reasonably confident about
There's
it.
There's a like, separate toggle.
It's not just like a setting on the watchOS page, you know, like a little subline somewhere.
Yeah.
They focused on it.
There is a separate toggle for Siri Hey than there is for Race to Speak. So you can turn off that and keep Race to Speak on.
Well, I'm looking forward to that in a big way.
So if that works and that solves the HomePod problem, it's like you literally have different commands for how you activate these. And so all of a sudden you don't get the interference. iPhone and iPad are still a problem. But those I find those that were less offensive than the way that the watch would just like take over. So I'm leaving both on for now. Race to Speak doesn't work yet from what I've seen, but we'll see how it goes.
And there wasn't a big change up in the API for watch apps. Unfortunately, they do let you have richer notifications now, which kind of something I actually talked about on a show not too long ago.
Yeah, was that messages?
The messages experience, yeah. Like more apps will be able to get closer to what messages does, where they can update the single notification with new messages as they come in, and they can change like the buttons that you can press and stuff like that. So there's progress in making like the notifications more interactive. The raw like WatchKit API is largely unchanged. They do have a better audio engine now, so third-party podcast apps should be possible,
and audiobook apps. Not iBooks,
yeah, and
or Apple Books.
Yeah. All of that stuff should be possible. And they're complementing that with their own podcast app. Finally.
So excited. So excited.
Cool. The podcast app logo looks great in a circle on the home screen.
It does.
It kind of it mirrors the music app in how it looks. Like you get the big artwork that you can like flip down and then you can browse the library on the iPhone. It says that recent episodes sync automatically to the watch. And then you can stream whatever you want. So it seems like your subscriptions will download smartly, which means I can't find like a direct download button on the watch UI yet. But I think if you have a new subscription overnight, it will download to the watch. So you can use it offline. But obviously it's meant for like LTE watches.
Yeah, I've not figured out yet either if it's only streaming or if it's download and cached at all. Like I've You would think so, just to not constantly be, you know, trying to rely on the streaming. But I don't know. What I have seen so far is that it's exactly what I wanted, and that you can, you know, as a new show comes in, the app knows about it and it syncs your progress between devices. You can ask Siri for something that isn't in your library already. So far for me, it says I need a newer version of the podcast app for that to work, but that's a beta issue. But it's, I mean, as an Apple Podcast user and not a third-party app user, this is exactly what I wanted. I can go on a run. I can use AirPods and stream a podcast over LTE without needing to, like, sideload it in a slow process way, turn off Bluetooth to make it a little bit faster. You know, it's like, this is exactly what I wanted, and it's here. And my only confusion is, are shows downloaded? Does it automatically download? Is there any control for that? Excuse me. There's some UI in the watch app for it, for like showing what's syncing. But I'm not sure really what's happening there. But in terms of just being able to stream a podcast that you subscribe to over LTE, it works. As I always left out of my car in San Jose and only had AirPods on my watch, I passed the time by streaming a podcast from my watch, and it worked flawlessly. I was so happy. So
there's the next Apple commercial. A man in a car park, locked out of his car, just listening to a podcast on his watch.
I swear it was a setup, yeah.
I'll tell you what, a really big thing that they announced is that they brought like a mini web browser to the watch now. That there's WebKit on the watch. So if you get like a link, it doesn't just say you can read the URL on the iPhone. You can tap the link and like browse the page on your, you know, one and a half inch screen.
Wasn't it only a week and a half ago when you and I were like joking that with the security updates, like they had copy and pasted like, you know, WebKit for each platform, and we're like WebKit for the watch, LOL. You know? here it
and
is.
Now it's here.
Yeah.
The big way they put the advertise this is for emails, because there was a lot of emails which would say, this message content cannot be viewed on Apple Watch, but you can view it on your iPhone. And now, instead of showing that stupid message, they actually render the email. And they showed an example where you go onto like a restaurant website and check the menu. I think that will come in handy a lot more than people think.
Me too.
And what's really interesting about it is, in practically, you can, like, it's a proper browser. It's not just like a static image. You can scroll around. You can enter text into fields. Like, you can talk to it to enter text.
Or you scribble.
You can scribble to it, yeah. You can, if you force press on the screen, you can reload the page. You can enter Safari Reader mode. You can go back. If you swiped it on the left side of the screen, it will go back and forward. Like, it's like a mini Safari, apart from you can't tap the URL bar to go to a different website. Mm-hmm. That's, like, the limitation. And I was having a load of fun with this. Like, I would send links to myself in messages so that I could click them on the watch to load them. But I really wanted to tweet from the Twitter website from the watch. So I went to the Twitter web app. It loaded mobiletwitter.com. I signed in. I spent ages typing in my ridiculously long password. Scribble. That was an experience.
Uh-huh.
It gave me the two-factor screen. I got the two-factor code. I typed it in. I pressed sign in. And it didn't work. I got so far. But the mobile Twitter website just doesn't really work well on it. If you're browsing just like... I searched Google. I went to google.com. I typed in a phrase. I searched it. You can tap on the results. It's really... Like, it is pretty fully fledged.
I mean, you can read 9to5 Mac on your Apple Watch now.
Like, yeah.
It's the web.
Yeah.
And it's not like crazy small. Like, you know, our website adapts to screen sizes, and so the text is like legible. You know, you probably can't read Fireball, but
Safari Reader if it can use it.
Yeah.
So you'll get a Safari Reader layout, which is, you know, it's almost like the news app, like kind of layout.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you're not meant to use it as a web browser. That's just kind of fun. But if you're in a pinch and you get this really important email that you couldn't see before, well, now you can.
Well, there's so many times, like, what does a Twitter link do on watchOS 4? Isn't it just, like, say, like, Twitter link, and, like, it doesn't embed the right way?
Sometimes it embeds, I think.
Hmm. Well,
but a lot of the time it is just a link, yeah.
Yeah, so now that'll, like, load properly every time. And like you said, email. Now, I do think that emails need to be, like, the alerts for them need to be reconsidered, because I'm seeing a lot of emails where I see the sender, and then the alert is like loading the email for me, and I can't tell. Like, it's like a big scroll to see what it is, and I don't think the alert needs to show that. Like, maybe in the mail app, but not in the alert. But just in terms of like practicality, like in terms of like the watch has LTE now, so this is one step closer to being detached from the iPhone. And also, just like the first Apple Watch, one of the problems with it was you would often see, like, if you send me two messages at the same time, it would all of a sudden become a readable message to two messages that you can't read, you know, it grouped them in a bad way. And then also you'd get email that mostly said, you know, go to Apple Watch and read this, or go to the iPhone and read this. And now that's like solving a problem that was there on day one with the obvious answer, which is, you know, add WebKit.
Yeah. And obviously now the hardware is co-op to actually make it feasible.
Yeah. Yeah. And something we haven't mentioned yet is that the first generation Apple Watch, the one that people call Series 0, is not supported by any of this with watchOS 5. So it's dropped.
All those gold watch owners.
Yeah, the $10,000 to $17,000 Apple Watch editions are now they can't be updated. So.
I'm sure the five people that bought them are crying. They had a cool demo. They had a new presenter, Jules. She did a demo of all the workout features, the challenges, and walkie-talkie from a bike, from like a exercise bike on stage.
A gym kit exercise bike. Indeed.
Yeah, they tapped in with gym kit. That was really fun to see. And like, it's kind of the trend now with the Apple Watch demos. Like, they did the one in the middle of the ocean. They did the one in the middle of Lake Tahoe. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing one on an exercise bike while she was talking through it. Like, where they're going to go next. It reminds me of the... that old Phil Schiller demo where he jumped with the wireless MacBook from that height onto the crash mat.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, theater, let's do something crazy. But
her presentation was like better than some of the other just straight up presentations. Like,
yeah.
In terms of like keeping, you know, collecting yourself and presenting. I got to meet her the next day before the run. So that was neat.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they announced this student ID card feature, which is only for select universities. But on both iPhone and watch, you can like use your NFC watch as your ID card. You can get into your dorm, you can get into classes, you can pay for things like on the campus credit. I mean, that sounds really cool, but obviously it'll be rolled out to a small set of universities, and it doesn't affect anybody if they don't use those campuses.
Yeah, one of the things I found interesting here is that it's quite a range of schools now. It's not very many, but the range is there. And it's both an iPhone and an Apple Watch feature, but they selected to say it during the watch part of it, which I think is clever because of, you know, like I said, the targeting for it. But then one of the universities is the University of Alabama, and that's the rival school to Tim Cook's alum, where he went to school, in Auburn University. So I'm sure he's all over Auburn to get on this, but got beat by Alabama there. Which I was just surprised to see that school there. It's a great school, and it's neat to see them on that list. So, but overall with the watch section, I mean, I was just like, you know, we didn't get like major changes to how apps can be made or third-party watch faces, but something I don't think we even had in this list because it wasn't in the keynote is controlling Control Center, you know, editing and rearranging Control Center. And I mean, that's been one of our complaints on this show for a long time, you know.
Yeah, I finally have Do Not Disturb at like the top of the screen, not at the very bottom of the scrolling list.
Yeah, I'm able to put ping my iPhone at the very bottom. And then Wi-Fi and LTE toggles just above that, because I don't use those really. Like the LTE stays on, the Wi-Fi stays on, you know. The phone, I don't want to accidentally make it scream, you know, unless I have to. And then below that is airplane mode, or above that is airplane mode and battery, because battery is just good. I don't need to see it all the time. And airplane mode is just not very common that you need to use that. And so what that means is that when I swipe up, I get to see flashlight, AirPlay, you know, changing your audio, the water lock, the mute button, Do Not Disturb, and then the theater mode. Six things that I'm more likely to use than the other ones. It's like almost a total inverse of what they show. My only complaint here is that before you could edit these, the last item on my list, because there's not an even number of items, was full width, and now it's half width, and there's a blank spot. But I'll take it though. That's fine. And then the edit
on my watch, because I don't have an LTE tile, huh. I have a clean columns with no gap.
Nice.
Do you remember a while ago I said like on my watch for some reason you can't toggle Wi-Fi and you can't see the network name like you can on the cellular one?
Right.
Where they fixed that now, so all watch owners can see what Wi-Fi network they're on. And actually, if you go into settings now, you can actually choose like explicitly. They have like a Wi-Fi section in there.
Yeah, just like on iPhone, you can finally pick your and I guess with WebKit maybe you can join in. Maybe you couldn't do that before. So
yeah, you mean like sign in to like a maybe.
Yeah, I haven't tried that, but I imagine like a Starbucks, you could say like, you know, yes, agree, and then use the Wi-Fi.
It'd still be painful, but yeah,
painful
to navigate it. But yeah, it's possible. Yeah. And the Control Center now you can access from inside an app.
Yeah,
they didn't mention this either on stage, which surprised me, but like, if you just long press on like the bottom edge of the screen and then swipe up, you kind of get like a peek at the card. It kind of like, they have a new animation which kind of indicates what you have to do. You swipe and you can get to Control Center and Notification Center. You just go from the top instead, from inside an app. So it's not just from the watch face now, which is something that is like, why didn't they do that 4 years ago?
This is like a throwback to like our second ever episode, whenever the watch was announced and in stores, but not out yet. And I remember driving 2 hours to New Orleans to see the Apple Watch in a store as like a fixed display unit, and just like spinning around and, you know, like kind of like touring the user interface. And just one thing that I assumed just from the presentation and everything before that was that you could do this, you know, you could access at any point, swipe up, swipe down, get to glances at the time, get to your alerts at the top, but, you know, and it wasn't the case. It was only on the watch face and not within apps. And I just thought, well, it kind of makes sense because if you're in an app, you want to scroll. But they've fixed that by, you know, like you said, this long press kind of gesture, and then you can swipe up and or swipe down to see what you to see with either one. There are a few places that you can't see that, right? Like the grid and the dock.
But yeah, like the home screen of the app icons and the dock, it doesn't work. Because if you long press on the home screen, it jiggles the icons around.
Yeah, yeah. So, if I could ask for like anything else out of the edit control center screen, it would be the ability to hide things. So like maybe I never want to see like quick access to LTE or Wi-Fi, but I can just go to settings and see this if I want to, and then that shortens the list down. But you know, we'll save that for watchOS 5.0.1. You know,
it's not going to happen.
Very next thing.
That'd be nice if they did that.
But another thing I would say is that I was pleased that you can edit this right on the watch, because like with the dock, if you don't do the sorting automatically option, you need to go to the iPhone to rearrange those tiles. Which is a step back in watchOS 4 from 3. I think still there in 5. But I just assume that because of that model, that you need to go to the watch app on the iPhone to do any serious like changing, you know, the arrangement. But it's the edit button. They jiggle. You move them around. You hit done. It's saved. You don't have to use the watch app, so that's nice.
And there's loads of like random little things in various apps that they've just cleaned up. Like if you do a timer, it remembers your recent custom timer. So like if you do an 8-minute timer, which isn't in the grid of like presets, you can scroll down now and it'll have a recent 8 minutes. You can just tap that and do another 8-minute timer.
Yeah.
And they've added like stocks. You can actually look up a stock quote from the watch now just by going into the app and adding it from there. There's various things all around the system where they kind of cleaned it up, like the screen the on messages where you used to have Apple Pay as like a full width thing. Now it's like half width combined with the other one. Like they've tidied a lot of stuff up.
You can add cities to the world clock and to weather. It's just things that make the watch more independent, you know, which is so good to see that they're not just ignoring what's been there and then adding new to it. They're also, you know, improving what's been there as well. So overall, watchOS 5 update, I installed the beta from day one. I've not had any crazy issues, but with the developer watchOS beta, you can't roll it back. So if you're concerned about like breaking an activity streak or something, I wouldn't recommend it. But
they pulled it, right?
Oh yeah. I guess it hasn't come back yet. I was in the window where you could get it. Some people were having issues with it, so I guess maybe you can't get it yet. But, as someone who's had it since like the first day, podcast app is my favorite. Customizing control center, I've already benefit from the convenience of that. Once I had like established new muscle memory of where things are, as I wanted it to be, and then that's the biggest thing for me. And then once the Siri Watch Face can do more things later this year, like whenever it's out, you know, shortcuts will be there to run them on the iPhone. Third party apps will be able to do things on the Siri Watch Face. That it's a big update that I'm happy with.
Just to amend what you just said, the shortcuts on the watch can run natively on the watch.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. If you're talking to the HomePod, then it just diverts to the phone. If you're doing shortcuts on the watch itself, if the developer sets them up, they can run natively on the watch with no phone required.
Even better.
Yeah.
Like there's a workflow app for the watch. So.
I don't know if there'd be a workflow app for the watch.
Well, I mean, there is now, and so you can guess that there might be, maybe could be a shortcut app for the watch. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But I was thinking like a third party app, right? If you make a third party app with a shortcut for like coffee, you don't have to have your phone with you as long as the developer's made it that way, right? The watch app can handle the whole shortcut.
Cool, awesome.
Yeah.
Next up,
I'm really happy with WatchOS 5. Mm-hmm. The heart rate animation is still bugged. Siri waveform doesn't respond to my voice.
Yes.
But these are just everlasting issues. They did fix the notification bubbles on iOS. So now when the notification bubble expands, like the animation isn't completely ridiculous. So that's good. But the outstanding watch problems continue for at least on beta 1. They're still there.
Yeah. And by the way, the group alerts are also present on watchOS as well as the do not disturb stuff. So you can swipe over an alert and then manage it right from the alert. It's awesome. So good stuff.
tvOS, quiet update, bigger than last year, but that's not saying much because last year it was literally Amazon Prime and that's it. This year they add Dolby Atmos.
The only thing on my list.
Something we've known for a while, right? Like they promised it before Christmas.
It only popped up in one place, which was Nilay Patel's review of the Apple TV 4K on The Verge. He said that Apple you know, PR told him that they weren't going to support Dolby Atmos in the future, but they didn't say when. And it was obviously never part of tvOS 11, but with tvOS 12, it is a flagship feature. And iTunes content that will support Dolby Atmos audio will be upgraded at no charge in the fall.
And I think they said it's the only streaming device to be certified for both Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision.
Yeah, so Dolby Vision is the, you know, there's high dynamic range color, there's a form of that is HDR10, and then Dolby Vision is the other form of that. And that's been one of the key features of Apple TV 4K. And that's true, that there's been no box to support both yet, and Apple TV is it, which is you know, neat to see.
It's pretty cool. They announced this zero sign-on thing where it can work out from your if you get cable from the same place you get, like cable TV from the same place you get cable broadband, it can work out from the broadband network that you're connected to the cable, so you don't have to sign in at all. You can just use the Apple TV. Sounds like a cool feature. Of course, they have to partner and get, you know, get relationships for it to actually work. And it didn't seem like they had that many to announce.
They had one partner, Charter Spectrum. And it wasn't like the biggest. I think like Comcast might be the biggest cable provider.
They got some new aerials. That's cool. They you can get space aerials, like from the International Space Station. You can see sunrise and sunset from the sky. It wasn't clear to me, are they actually geographically shown for your current location, or is it just one for everyone in the world? Like, will I see the UK on these aerials? I'm not sure.
I bet it cycles through, like, all of them that they have.
Right,
yeah. And it's, like, a separate, like, you know, there's aerials now, but it's, like, space aerials. It's, like, a separate screen. I've not installed, I've just got home last night, so I haven't installed these on my Apple TVs yet.
You can actually tap on the screen now, and it will show you the location, like, in a little description of where this was shot.
Yeah, well, something that people have asked for since the beginning, because, you know, the question mark is, where is that? And now you can tap and find out.
And if you swipe, it can advance, so you can see more. Like, you don't have to wait for it to end. So.
Yeah. The thing with tvOS, like, tvOS 12, okay, what would I have asked for? You know, if I could do anything, it would be, like, you know, make YouTube and Amazon and Netflix have good apps that work like every other app, like, you know, or build it all into the TV app. And they're working, like, they're getting there, not quite yet. Like, if you can stream video from other sources through the TV app using the TV app's interface, problem solved. But other than that, I mean, obviously Atmos is something I have an Atmos soundbar from LG, the LG SJ9, and my television can play Dolby Atmos, but not the Apple TV, and that's where all my content's purchased. So this will be able to unlock the utility of my soundbar. And then the thing with screensavers is, like, it's funny that screensavers is like a feature update on an OS, but for tvOS, like, it's such a compelling feature too. It's like,
yeah, you know. I mean, bigger stuff like picture in picture, I was kind of hoping for, but they didn't do that.
Yeah.
And then any addressing of multiple users on any platform is also not present.
I mean, anything with Siri too just really didn't get acknowledged for Apple TV. It's just kind of done now.
Yeah, it's just kind of, there you go. Have fun with it.
Yeah.
So a small TV update. That seems to be the common theme.
Bigger than last year, though. And by the way, they had to do a lot of recapping in the tvOS section of, like, these are things that exist. But I think that's fair, because last year, it was just Tim Cook saying more later this year. And then there was an event that talked about everything, but not WWDC, which is, like, why should you develop apps for Apple TV? Because we have compelling features. And, you know, I think it was totally fair to say, since we were here last year, these are all the things that we've released and that are on the tvOS now.
Although it was quite weird, they didn't mention any developer notion at all for that.
Right.
Like, there was literally nothing. And it's not like there are no developer features in tvOS 12. There is small, but there are some stuff. And one of the things that excites me is they're offering native UI components now, so that third-party apps made with UIKit, not TVML, can look like the native system apps. You know, like how we always talk about Plex looking like an iTunes app, right?
Yeah.
They're releasing a UI library now which closely reflects the way the posters work on the Apple apps and the way you can drag around and get that stuff. So there are advancements there. They just didn't... I think they could have cut, like, all the complaining of people on Twitter, like, why they even bothered to talk about this stuff, if they just had one slide saying, and here's some developer improvements that will be coming as well. But
yeah,
they just didn't do it. So that was TV.
Yeah. And then we moved on to the Mac.
The Mac.
Mojave. Mac OS Mojave.
Dark mode.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da!
I mean, it kind of took the thunder out that we saw it over the weekend, but it was also just like, neat, here we go, dark mode, yep.
You obviously are running Mojave, I am not. Are you using dark mode?
I turned it on to try it, but I'm not sticking to it right now.
Because? Any particular reason?
I think that, like, so for example, like Tweetbot has a dark mode too, which I didn't use because I need everything dark or everything light. And a lot of what I do is on my Mac is like reading the web, you know. And so you're not going to get, you know, like changing the every website that from white to black. Like, it's going to be up to the website to do that.
That's not even true. Like, there is no web API to know what the system appearance is.
Right.
So a website can't even know if it's white or dark. Well,
mode. I mean, like it would be the R sitting kind of like a dark thing for a long time. You could read that in dark, and you could like change it back and forth manually. So you can pick and I think YouTube does that on their website, but not automatically. You know, so that's tricky. It's like make it looks different, and maybe it didn't need to get used to it. It does look cool, and it is well done. And if you're only using apps that are dark, you know, and not the web, then I think it's super cool. It takes getting used to. I kind of felt like I'm using the 12-inch MacBook, and so I kind of feel like maybe this is better on bigger displays where things are more spread out, and less like dense, I guess. But then Chance at NFI Mac was using a 27-inch iMac, I believe, and like thought the opposite, that maybe it looked better on laptops. So there's something about it that's a little weird, but
is a little strange.
But with Tweetbot, like they have a dark mode. It's their own because they had it all their own before this was announced. But then you open the preferences app for their Twitter client, and then it's light mode because it's not really dark mode. It's you know, in their app, it's just their timeline is dark. Now, if all the apps update, and then it's just like you never run into like a blinding white window, then I think it'll be really cool.
Yeah, so maybe it'll be more compelling come October, November time when it's actually all the software updates actually come out.
Right. But all of Apple's apps that update to it, like Finder, iTunes especially, I think looks awesome in dark mode. Like, that's a perfect app to have dark mode anyway because it's like a theater type app. It looks really cool. I'm happy with it. I'm not running it right now, but mostly just because right now I'm kind of overwhelmed by like all the new stuff anyway. And so the whole theme changing is a little bit too overwhelming for me yet. I need to take it in doses. So.
Yeah, I'm glad that they do offer it now though versus like the Suido dark mode there before where it was just the menu bar and the dock. Like,
yeah,
now you can actually
have
the whole app Chrome dark. It's good to have the option. And they have a load more accent colors now. So, you know, like the little drop downs and stuff, you can choose not just from like blue and silver, but you can have like green and red and yellow, and you can like customize it a bit more if you want to. And now those customizations can be on the dark or the light theme, so it can be on either.
Mm-hmm. They have wallpapers for light and dark, and a wallpaper that goes from light to dark.
Yeah, like change it. There's like 16 separate images that it slowly transitions through depending on the current time.
Yeah. Now, the one thing you cannot do with that is with dark mode is Apple TV does is you can't change from light to dark mode based on time of day with sunset and sunrise like you can with tvOS, which is kind of a missing feature that I think would be
a bit stupid,
easy to do. There's location services already. It knows it changes the wallpaper based on sunset and sunrise. But maybe, you know, I think as an option, it just makes sense. There's no reason not to do that in the feature version.
Yeah. Like, especially if you're going to have a dynamic wallpaper, but not the actual Chrome.
Yeah. In that wallpaper that's dynamic, it won't show you, like, bright daylight if you're in dark mode. Like, it's intelligent enough to do that. So they're almost there. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. The wallpaper looks cool. Like, the Mojave Desert sand dune stuff looks...
Yeah.
I like the wallpaper.
Yeah, I can't wait to get the second version of that in 5 years. It'll be good. Like, all different wallpapers on iOS.
Desktop, they added this like stacks mode. So if you have a really messy desktop, you can press a button and then it just separates into little groups of file type, basically.
I categorize this in the same category as like I discussed before last week how they used to do you know, they had spaces and then with the mission control. And it's like, how do you organize, like, what is the paradigm of like what a desktop is? Like, how do you organize it? That's like unique to a Mac and you don't have it on Windows, et cetera. And I think this is like that. Like the, I think it's called Stacks on the Dock is yeah. The folders on the right of that line. Now you have a new line. It's like recent apps, like on iOS, but you've got that, those folders or, you know, and I use, downloads there. And documents and podcasts, which is just to speed up my workflow on the Mac. And you can change like how that those open. Those have always been there for a long time, for as long as I've used the Mac at least. But Stacks on the desktop, I think, is in that same category. It's neat, you know, the way that it you can scrub through and see like what's within. You can drag it out whenever you move, you know, stop your cursor on the right file. My only thing that I think on this is that I'm super tidy on my desktop anyway. So I'm not sure if I'm actually going to use it or not. I've turned it on just because, but I'm really my documents folder, my downloads folder, and my desktop. I manage like I do my physical space, you know. So, but for people that already have a messy desktop, I think it'll be really handy.
See, I have a messy desktop quite a lot of the time, but I don't know if I'm going to use this feature because almost all of the things I have on the desktop are screenshots. So I'm taking a 2D layout of all these screenshots and putting them into, you know, a 1D layout where I can only see one at a time.
Basically,
and I kind of had these screenshots like sit around for like a few days. So you kind of get to know where they are and you can just go, oh yeah, that screenshot's in the bottom left and then that screenshot's in the top right.
Organized chaos, yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of organized chaos. And then after like 2 weeks, I just delete them all once I'm done with everything and then start again.
Yeah.
But the Stacks probably isn't going to help me because like, if they're all mostly images anyway, now I've just got a really small look at all these images. So
yeah, no, it is a little bit different than like making one folder of just screenshots because it's like one tap and then they go back to where they came from. And yeah. And it's like almost like on the dock, like opening up one of the little springs, you know, the little Stack springs. But you know, it's a feature that you need to turn on for the, you know, for one, and you don't have to use it.
Yeah. I think it's a nice idea. I just don't know if it fits me.
And the Mac isn't dead because they're doing Stacks now, so hey.
I mean, all of these features are definitely more encouraging on like actually giving the Mac meaningful differences, not just bringing over what iOS did to, you know, support it, if you see what I mean. Like, these are like distinctive Mac-only stuff.
But next year the iPad gets this stuff too.
Yeah, like if you had Stacks on the iPad home screen, that'd be cool.
That would be cool, yeah.
But no. The Finder has a gallery view now, which is like a 2D replacement for the cover flow view they had a while ago, and it's like a large primary thumbnail, and then they have like a roster or a little slideshow below of everything else, and you can kind of like tab through them. Pretty nice.
What's your Finder view that you use the most?
I use the column one.
I use icons.
Icons?
Yeah, I use icons. Unless I'm like looking for something that's like down the hierarchy, but I use icons.
Icons
feels like iOS kind of, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but when you have so many files, like icons just gets like you can't see the file names very well. You can't sort. I don't know. Like I'm a column fan. I like the hierarchy of going down, down, down.
So I don't know that I'll use this new gallery view either. Like it's kind of like you know, with cover flow. Like it's pretty good for photos, but like, do you really need to see a big preview of a folder icon or a music, you know, icon?
Yeah. Like if you have a folder just of pictures, then
and the Finder remembers like which view you use for like which you know where in the Finder, so you can have like your photos folder be gallery, and then you know your applications folder be the same icon.
But where do I look at my photos?
Yeah, in the photos app. Yeah. But I mean, if people use Finder, you know, then
true, and they have like this nice sidebar now, which has like. It's like when you press Command I and you get all the metadata in that like floating panel. They've kind of put that and more in this sidebar, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. If you use gallery.
And they have some actions you can do, like rotate from the Finder.
Just a moment.
And you can even make custom ones using Automator, which is something they probably haven't mentioned on stage for like a decade, but you can put like little Automator scripts down there and stuff. And then the only touch bar reference that across the whole thing is they show up in the touch bar as well, like the custom actions show up as little buttons in the touch bar.
Oh, nice. The sidebar is called there is a sidebar that's on the left side. The new sidebar is called preview, and so even if you're on like the icons view or the list view, you can still use the preview. You just have to go to the menu bar view and then say show preview or do command shift p for preview.
That's nice. So it's not just gallery.
Yeah, That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
In what is like a running joke for me is that there's now one more place where the markup features appear.
Yeah.
Like every year they're like, and we added markup to mail.
It's coming to iTunes next.
We added markup to photos. This year, markup inside of Quick Look. So you can crop and rotate and trim videos and circle things all from pressing spacebar. That's probably somewhat useful on occasion, instead of having to open up all the preview to do it.
Yeah, I think it's useful.
They have this new like screenshot interface where you don't have to remember the keyboard shortcuts for, you know, copy to desktop, copy. It just comes up with like this HUD on the screen. You can just click on the icon and do it. That's helpful. They have video recording now inside of this like screenshot interface versus having to like dive into QuickTime and do it. That's nice because I take screen recordings quite a lot and it's always like QuickTime. There's just so many steps that it should be easier.
How do you activate that? It's like a, let's see.
I think if you do
Command Shift 5, and there it goes.
Yeah, or like Command Shift 3, and it.
That's one way. I've got Command Shift 1, 2, 3, and 4 customized, not with the default, because, you know, there's a screenshot to desktop. Like default, yeah. I guess, and then screenshot to clipboard is like not default, but it's like way too many keys involved in that one. It's like one too many for me, so I use 1, 2, 3, and 4 instead. But yeah, this is neat. Command Shift 5 gets me there.
And they have this continuity camera, which is interesting. Like it, if you want to insert a picture somewhere, you can call up the camera on your phone, take a picture on your phone, and it just instantly appears in the document.
Yeah, like for me, the old way, if I really wanted to do that, like I said, it'd be like, take a photo on the iPhone, airdrop it to the Mac, and then drag and drop it. And now it's a little bit tidier than that.
Interesting idea.
Yeah.
Then we have the app dates for Mac OS. Yeah. And this is the news app, the stocks app, the voice memos app. What they look like on the iPad, they look like on the Mac, for a reason we'll get to very shortly. And they brought Home to the Mac.
I'm
yes,
so
HomeKit on the Mac. You can do it through the interface, or you can ask Siri to change your lights or whatever.
On my private wish list of like not being disappointed if these things, you know, like these are so obvious that I won't be disappointed. My Mac request was just a new wallpaper. I didn't think HomeKit was likely enough to put on that don't be disappointed list. But here it is. It works.
You were proven wrong.
I've used it.
They then have a whole swath of security enhancements. So, funnily enough, like the Mac doesn't have permissions for camera and microphone today, like the iOS does. And as soon as they mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, it doesn't. But you just kind of assume it. It just feels so like basic that the fact it's not there is really weird. But there you go. Like they're adding all these permissions for various stuff like camera and microphone.
Like to open up Skype today, I needed to give permission for camera and microphone. Yeah.
But didn't you say Slack showed your video feed before you even approved it?
Skype showed my preview video feed.
Skype showed your preview video before you approved video access.
Like maybe it wouldn't show you, but it showed me like the preview.
Yeah.
At least.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So they might tighten up before they finish. And they have some more like Safari changes for like more permissions on tracking cookies and things like that. Then they brought up the Mac App Store. Mm-hmm. And this is nice. They had another new presenter, Ann Tai. She talked about this big redesign of the Mac App Store. And they've moved from the crummy like web in a wrapper, which is what the current App Store is. The new Mac App Store is native app kit.
They've built an app
application. Yeah. And it looks, it's like a really nice reinterpretation of like the iPad App Store.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest, I guess, bigger than that, they announced that Microsoft Office, Lightroom from Adobe, Transmit from Panic, and BB Edit are coming to the App Store. And Transmit and BB Edit are big like indie apps.
Coming back to the App Store, right?
Yeah, that came coming back. Case, they famously left.
Yeah,
and now they're back. And in the keynote, they didn't mention why they were coming back, because like a freshened Mac App Store with editorial and some nice videos probably isn't enough. Like they left partly for reasons of money, like the 30% share was too much, and there were problems with sandboxing, and you can't have like upgrade pricing, and all of this stuff, you know. after it transpired that the reason they're coming back is because sandboxing requirements are being lifted, so you can get more exceptions to sandboxing, which allows Transmit to come back to the App Store. Coda cannot come back to the App Store, like Panic's, like, you know, big IDE, like web development software. That's still not coming, but they have enough of opt-in allowances for these apps now that they can return. And I think a lot of that is that the security model is locked down by the fact they have all these, like, permission requests for, you know, that camera, microphone, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So now that they've got that in place, they can allow more apps to kind of run free, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the 30% pricing and all that's still in place, so there's no massive shake-up into the business model stuff.
Right.
And then they talked about Metal machine learning for 10 minutes, and I think everyone was getting bored. Because it was just kind of boring.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, we must be at the end, right? This was like 2 hours in now.
Mm-hmm. I kept watching the time, and I'm like telling our team, like, we are over 2 hours now.
Yeah, and we're talking about machine learning?
Uh-huh. It wasn't quite enough of like a...
It didn't feel like the big kicker finish, right?
It would be a really weird ending of like,
machine learning. Yeah, it's like, what's going on here? And then they transitioned into what we call Marzipan, but they don't actually give it a name.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that they're not merging macOS and iOS. Federico, this big slide with the big question, and then just a single slide that said no in massive letters.
Are you merging macOS and iOS? One slide. Next slide. Yeah, no.
No. So they're doubling down on keeping them separate, but they gave everybody what they call a sneak peek at a multi-year project to bring UIKit applications, so iOS apps, to macOS.
Mm-hmm.
And probably surprising no one, the four iPad apps that came to the Mac minutes earlier, News, Docs, Voice Memos, and Homes, are examples of apps using this new framework.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this?
So for the News, getting a new design, like adding a toolbar to that app makes it more like a Mac app. So really they kind of like made it feel like more like a Mac app on the iPad and then brought it to the Mac. Okay, cool. I guess the same thing for Voice Memos and Stocks. Those are apps I use last. For the Home app, it's I'm okay with it on iPad and iOS. Like, it's kind of like Control Center, but as a full app, very widgety. A lot of the interactions are like super touch-based. Like, you know, you force touch to open up a panel. You slide things around. It's not like, and it's like that is an iOS app, a touch-based app. On the Mac, it's pretty much like that. Like, the Home app feels like you're running it in an emulator, even though it's not. Even though it's running on your Mac, it does not feel like a Mac app. And I love that HomeKit works with Siri on the Mac, and I love that I can control my HomeKit accessories on my Mac with the Home app. But if they had done a design it from scratch app kit Mac for Home on the Mac, it would not look like this at all. It would be very different. And there's just things like force touch is now a right click in the app, and it's then you're like dragging sliders around. It's like it needs a lot more attention to feel like it's a Mac app, even though it really is a Mac app. You're not like in a web view of some sort, and you know, it's more Mac app. It's more like a Mac app than like Slack is, I guess. It's weird, and
it's like native performance, but non-native UI,
right? Like, and I'm not complaining that there's Home app on the Mac now. It's just that in this multi-year project, you know, consider it an experiment. This is the direction that they're going, but they'll need to learn lessons before they ship it. You know, more than just these four apps. It's like, I hope they do more customization. Like, they have the stoplight controls, you know, for you know, controlling the windows and closing it and that kind of thing. There's right click, like, you know, mouse keyboard work. It's just a lot of weird things, like, especially in the Home app. It's less suited on the Mac than the other apps are. And so then you go, so, okay, so what about some other apps? You know, I think for a lot of apps, like, you wouldn't care. Like, Netflix is just a player, and then you have a Netflix app, and you're watching your Netflix video, and you go full screen. Like, that's fine. What would a document app look like? Apps that already have Mac versions, I'm grateful for, and I hope that all future Mac apps, like long term, aren't like this. Like, unless there are enough differences where you can do more work than they've done with the Home app, and then make it feel good, even though it's still originates from iOS. because I'd hate to have. It's a couple of things. Like the good thing with having a bigger catalog of apps with more functionality, like that's HomeKit now. You can do HomeKit on the Mac because they brought this Home app over there, and not just through Siri. But if all the apps like quality goes down, then the Mac is less, it's less special, I guess.
Yeah, I think an emblematic example of this is in the Home app. When on the Mac, when you right click, so you right click on one of the tiles, and it says, quick controls or settings for that for that device, that accessory. Then you click the device button, and it brings up the floating panel that is exactly the same panel that you get on iOS, right? Like a modal sheet that presents over the app.
Whereas if it was actually
and it has text links like done, like it's not like, it doesn't look like a Mac button, right? It's like a text link like iOS 70, and if that was actually a Mac app, that would be a separate window, right?
Right.
It wouldn't be like this modal sheet stuck to the rest of the Home app. It would be like a pop-out window that you could drag around and control separately, and the controls would look different. And if you find like one of those sliders, like it's like an iOS slider, like that doesn't make any sense in a Mac. You'd have a drop-down menu, right? Like,
yeah. On the other hand, I can see my HomeKit cameras on my Mac for the first time. It's like,
yeah,
that's cool.
Like there's a huge functional benefit to it, but it's definitely suboptimal interface. Like it's everyone kept joking about like, oh, they're not going to just make the iOS simulator, where you can develop your iPad apps on the Mac and they just run in this window. But it's far closer to that than like a native UI framework at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's phase one, they said, like they're testing their own apps this year, and then there's plenty of time left for them to make it more like, I think a good example of like a really nice cross-platform app is Photos, right? Like You have Photos on iOS, and then Photos on Mac famously uses a framework called UXKit, which is private, but it allows Apple to share a lot of the code, and you can see the similarities in like the main canvas and stuff, but you still have like native inspectors and native tab menus and like pop-out windows, The current iteration of Home, News, Stocks, and Voice Memos are close to just iPad apps that you can control with a keyboard and mouse, not native experiences.
Yeah. Now,
and maybe that will change, right? Maybe by this time next year, they'll have fleshed it out more, so you can, like, as a developer, you could only share the HomeKit canvas, which is like, the home screen with all the bubbles on. But then if you click on it, it could actually launch like a proper AppKit window, and you could, it'd feel more Mac-y. The concern there is that they're happy to ship these apps today in this state where they look like iPad apps.
Yeah. And I really do think like going to the news app, I don't necessarily feel like the news app is a port. I mean, it is. It's the news app on iOS, but it feels like okay on the Mac. Like it feels like this is what it might look like anyway if they just like made it.
Yeah, but that's because it's simpler, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it just feels better. Like, the Home app is just weird. Like, it needs some more work to feel good on the Mac. The other apps, like, I think the other apps are okay, which is a good sign for, future iOS apps coming to the Mac,
And then the catalog. I mean, here's the thing, right? Would you rather have a native version of iPad Slack on the Mac, or would you rather have the web app that we have now in a wrapper? And it's like, you probably have the iPad version, right? Because it's better.
Yeah, it would perform way better. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Or would you prefer going using the Netflix iPad app on your Mac versus going to Netflix.com in the browser?
The app.
You'd probably pick the app, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, it's not ideal. It's not perfect. And maybe an Apple of yesteryear wouldn't settle for anything less than perfect. But what, a more modern Apple does, they ship stuff that's more practical, right? And it's not ideal. It's less like idealistic and more practical. Like they're not getting rid of AppKit, right? They're saying if you want to make true Mac apps, you should carry on using AppKit like you do now, and they continue to iterate on that framework. They're making it better, but they're trying to ease the path to get more apps on the Mac in general.
Mm-hmm.
And like I think of my apps, right? I'm a developer. Like Bingo Machine, it's a small window where numbers come down and you have a grid. I can probably port that to the Mac with very little changes, and it'd probably be fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I made a real native version of that, I'd probably just change how the buttons look a little bit, and then that'd be it.
Yeah.
And maybe when this framework does come out for real, like, comes to developers next year, they'll let you have more freedom in customizing that stuff if you want to do it. But you can kind of plug and play a lot of the apps that you think of on your iPad. If you could have them on the Mac as is, you'd be happier than the current solution, which is using a web browser or using, like, a wrapper app, which is a web browser with a title bar on it. So I think it's better than what we have. Like, it's better than status quo. And then down the line, it kind of pushes towards more, you know, like, more, like, I hope it can facilitate making an app like Photos, whatever this framework ends up being.
Yeah.
But people that are more lazy, like companies that are more lazy, can just ship the app as is and it works okay.
It's like it's using resources in a way that's smart. And if you get the function on the Mac that you wouldn't have before, that's a good thing. Also, like, so far they're showing, you know, these are like what the iPad app is like, and that's why they have these apps for the iPad for the first time. You know, in the case of like Stocks and voice memos. But I can see an iPhone version being okay on the Mac for apps that are just like you just need a column, you know, and you don't need a whole like window and sidebar and stuff like that. And that was
like a Twitter app.
So what's that?
A Twitter app.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't want Twitter for iPad as the Mac app. You just want the column view, really. And that's what you get on the Mac, you know, in that case. So,
and if if you take Tweetbot now, you make it full screen on the Mac, the native Tweetbot Mac app is terrible in full screen. Like,
yeah, it relies on you having plenty of columns to be good in full screen.
Yeah, whereas if they had more code sharing and they could just base it off the iPad version, you'd have a better experience there too. Like,
there are
definitely benefits from bringing this framework over, and a lot of apps will need very little changes to feel pretty Mac native, and the developers, you know, like BBEdit, like Transmit, they're not going to go and take the iPad version and make that their Mac app. Like, they'll carry on doing the dedicated app kit development.
Yeah,
as long
you have
as
choice.
Apple keeps pushing that side of it forward, you're not, it's kind of more like you can only win, right? Because the people that were doing native Mac development before will carry on doing that, and then you get some fraction of people that move their iPhone and iPads app over, and the best benefit there is you're going to reduce the number of like Electron and websites that you have to visit. Like,
now with iOS apps made with UIKit, they're only iOS apps are only distributed to the App Store. On the Mac, will apps made with UIKit be only on the Mac App Store, or will they be just
you can distribute them however you like? That is what Federighi said in an interview this week.
That's awesome.
You can do whatever you want.
That is cool. So then could you you know, like I see Stephen Chalton Smith already like unpacking, you know, taking apart what, you know, and like looking at his apps that he, you know, his projects using this, you know, some that would need more polish before shipping. But could you do like a, you know, bootleg copy of an app now and distribute it that way, and it would run on macOS Mojave?
You could, but the installation process for the app is more complicated than double clicking on it.
Yeah, I see.
Because you have to change some system level stuff, right?
Okay.
But if you did that, then yeah, you could ship an app. You could what Stephen Trouton Smith is showing on Twitter today, he could bundle that up as an app, send it to you. If you did the same hack to make, you know, it work, you could just launch it.
And you could run Instagram on your Mac.
Well, if Instagram shared the binary, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Neat.
So I think it's cool that they're committing to doing this, and I hope when it comes around next year, it does have enough flexibility to, like, you know, be more like Photos or be more like Notes, right? Like, no, at the moment, Notes is a native AppKit app on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not out of the question that they can make that, you know, a UIKit-based app. And just as long as they keep, you know, there's three sidebars and the kind of the context menus and stuff, they could turn that into, you know, iOS-based. And the big one is Messages, right? Like, Messages,
yeah.
They could bring the effects. If you take Messages on iPad and make it, you know, a window on the Mac desktop, there isn't very many changes you need to make it feel great, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make it feel like an actual Mac app. And that would be way better than today, where you don't get all the iMessage extensions, you don't get the balloon effect, you don't get any of that stuff, right? You get a really bad version of the invisible ink, and all of these new, you know, animojis and memoji stuff, none of that's on the Mac. Like,
yeah, you can't.
And if they could bring Messages... Yeah. In that way, it helps Apple out and it helps customers out massively.
Yeah, and by the way, kudos to Mark Gurman reporting at Bloomberg on the Project Marzipan stuff from I think last November. At a high level, because there was pushback in recent weeks about that's not happening this year. You know, it doesn't ship this year in terms of like developers being able to use it, but the apps that used it from Apple's side did, and it's different than UX Kit with Photos, so it's a different thing than that was.
Yeah, and you can inspect the binaries, and there is literally it says Marzipan. So
right, yeah. So I was sitting next to Mark Gurman in the keynote, and one of his colleagues, and as this section came up, I just looked over and smiled and did a fist bump, and it's just like, good job, man.
Yeah. Well, that was the close.
That was the big closer. There was no like separate HomePod section or any kind of like one more thing. But this was the sneak peek, and it's I think that gives a lot of people something to chew on for a long time. And it's nice that they present this now. And so if they
couldn't not announce this and ship those apps, right? Like right. People would find out. We just talked about it, how they look like iPad apps. You don't even need to inspect the binary and find it. You can just look at it and you can tell this is an iPad app, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they're going to ship these apps, they had to announce it. Or they'd just be saying, everyone would know. Like, it'd be stupid if they didn't preview it. And previewing it now gives all the developer community something to look forward to and chew on. And you can't come off the keynote going, oh, Apple didn't care about the Mac enough. Because... Right. You know, they've shown their plans to do this massive effort to bring UIKit to macOS. Even if it's not available to actually do it this year, you know, you curb any, like, oh, Apple doesn't care about us type of thing. Like, there's clearly
you can plan your next year the right way, which is, you know, if you've never made a Mac app before, you can say, well, I'm not doing that this year, you know, in terms of like bringing my iOS app to the Mac. You can focus on improving your iOS app, and then the Mac benefits from that next year.
Yeah. Or if I take myself, right, say if I was considering doing a new app and I was like, should I make a Mac version? Now I know how the framework is at the moment where, you know, it's basically like a mirror of the iPad app. Uh-huh. I might now go, oh, it's all right. It's time for me to learn AppKit because it's still going to have all these advantages.
Yeah.
So it's not just like I'm going to wait. It's also, okay, now there is actually a point to bothering to learn this framework, right, that I don't know right now.
Yeah.
Tim Cook came back on stage and they had this funny video where they talked to parents of app developers.
Right. The families of developers. Yeah, that was like the first video was like more lighthearted. This was like more like, you know, tugs at your heart kind of thing.
Hitting you in the gut, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. And there was no hardware except for the new Pride Band, which is a new take on the Pride Band. And then on Apple.com there were cases and new summer colors and new Beats headphone colors. But no new Macs, no new iPads, no iPhone SE of any sort yet, no AirPower or AirPods that can charge via AirPower. These are all still to come.
And obviously, no bezel-less iPads.
Right.
No keyboard fixed MacBooks.
It's going to be a big fall, right?
Well, you'd hope so.
Right. All right. I think that there's a lot left for us to figure out over the summer, you know, through each beta. And it's always fun. Every couple of weeks we get a new beta, we can talk about what's changed in those. So I look forward to doing that. I look forward to having more time with these betas. I've spent a lot of time with macOS Mojave, but not as much as I'd like to with just tinkering around. There's a lot of stuff. I'm not touched tvOS yet, so I'm going to install that today and see how that looks. I don't think I can actually use any of the Atmos stuff yet, but I'll check out the screensavers at least.
And by next week, you have a soundbar.
Yeah, I have a soundbar. I just can't use it yet with Atmos. It's just basic. And then with WatchOS, I'm having a blast with the podcast app. I am. And then the challenges now with Greg, I've got to beat him. And and with iOS, today was the first day I got iOS on my iPad before the installation wasn't going so well. And we'll end on this. The control center change to make control center in the top right corner of the iPad to match the iPhone 10, I think,
dumb.
is is the absolute wrong move on Apple's part. They needed to match the gesture if they, you know, maybe, but not by doing that. That was the wrong gesture on the iPhone, is the wrong gesture on the iPad even more. I don't think that the status bar means notch, because even if it did, then it would only make sense in one orientation if there was one notch. And as we've discussed, I think that the width of the size of the iPad are big enough to fit the sensors, and that you can have the forehead and chin be shrinked and then be uniform on all sides anyway and have no notch. I think it's just, you know, just they changed the status bar.
And you've got the date now on the iPad instead of it saying iPad in the corner. Yeah.
If you look on the Mac, there's always been the gap in the middle with some information on the left and some on the right. And now iOS and on iPhone and iPad match that too.
What I'll say on Control Center, just to close, is that I don't mind the gesture on the phone when you go top right. On the iPad, especially on my 12.9-inch iPad, it's such a... so far away.
It's separated from multitasking now. It's like a waste of space.
Yeah, because they didn't just make it like a shortcut to activate it. They've moved Control Center into its own layer that modally covers the screen with blurriness, and like the tiny thin column on the right is Control Center.
They
moved Control Center to top right. Uh-huh. I thought it would still be combined with the multitasking view, and doing the top right gesture would just be a quick way to get there. But separating it out into its own layer is stupid.
Yeah, you know, the better version of that was two versions ago with iOS 10 and beyond, or an earlier, when it was just like it popped up over your content but not the full screen. Like, that's an iPad, that's the way it should be,
and you get to it from the bottom,
right? Yeah, it's not good. So all right, other than that, I mean, there were so many things in this keynote that we've had on our wish list, you know, in our stories and on this show, that came to fruition, and you know, through the betas we're able to use a lot of it now. And I was just overall very happy. I wasn't overwhelmed, but I was very happy.
And there was a lot of stuff that we hadn't even thought of, right? But looks good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I was happy with it, for sure.
Yeah, good WWDC 2018. So, and we've had plenty of time to sit on it. It was my fault through travel that we weren't able to record on Wednesday as planned, but on Friday morning instead. Hopefully this gives you 3 hours or so to listen to and make up. So with that being said, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We will be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I am Apollo Zach there. Benjamin, you are?
BZMAO, and still not on Instagram.
Not on Instagram. All right. And you can email us at happyhour@9fmmac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks again to both SetApp and Simple Contacts for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. Check out the show notes to start your 7-day free trial of SetApp, and visit simplecontacts.com/happyhour, or use promo code HAPPYHOUR at checkout to save $30 on your contact lenses.